Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hey everybody, welcome to your Wednesday night delight. This is the Mark Order Podcast, episode 10. Can you believe it, Kate?
Hey, we should just celebrate our 100th episode every episode until people catch on.
Yeah, this is our 100th episode, and then this is our 100th episode.
Yeah. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, Kate?
I am doing well. I'm excited to do this. I got to see you in person.
I know. Isn't that great?
I know. It was wonderful. We went to He Who Shall Not Be Named's house, which was lovely. They just moved in. He Who Shall Not Be Named and his lovely wife. And we got to see Jamie. And we had snacks that were provided by
That's right.
And we also did some fun stuff in the Discord and on the Facebook before it got taken down. If you want to know the name of He Who Shall Not Be Named. So that's all just a ploy to go to get you to look at our past content.
Yeah. You know, we admittedly, so we knew we'd be like watching the pay-per-view together. And of course, you know, this being the Mark Order Podcast and we discuss everything AEW, we are certainly going to break down Double or Nothing a little bit later in the show. So stick with us. We're going to get there. But I think we also sometimes lack the foresight to plan some things. And clearly it hit me way late. And I was like, oh, we should like live broadcast this in some fashion, like us, not like the pay-per-view, but just us like hanging out, talking, shooting the shit like we're watching it together with anybody else in the room, like not calling play by play, which is fun. And it was pretty cool. And we were on Facebook and I think a few people were checking us out. And then all of a sudden it was like, you violated some policy because it hears audio in the background of the pay-per-view. Like we weren't showing it. I get it. Like we're not going to shit talk, you know, anybody, but it did kind of suck. So we just moved it to the Discord and that didn't dawn on us either. And I think maybe, Kate, we should probably keep that up in the future. We'll just pop up in the Discord. It gives everybody a reason to join up. Cause the cool thing with the Discord too, is like people could talk directly to us.
Yeah. That was really fun to be able to actually not only have people interacting with us and commenting, but to have their audio feeding in was so much fun. So thank you to Berg and Ryan Schlong and everybody who was kind of interacting with us. Matt couldn't be there because he was working, but he at least got involved enough, I think, to share his feelings on Marco Stunt, which I will not repeat because it was rude what he said.
That is true. So I, you know, Kate, you bring up Matt and, you know, yeah, I guess he was quote unquote working Sunday. But it, you know, we do have to bring up something in all seriousness. People probably who are checking us out are noticing, Matt is absent again. And you know, unfortunately, you know, he says work a lot and it's not work. So we have to kind of break down the wall and be real for a second for everybody. I think see, you're still like gimmicking it up, Kate. I'm trying to be super serious.
I'm sorry. You just can't say that without thinking of that theme.
I get it. He is great. but yeah, like, you know, Matt chatted up me and Kate earlier. It kind of came out of left field. It was not expected, but I mean, I was a little surprised, Kate, when Matt let us know, like, hey, listen, I'm not coming on tonight. I don't know when I'm going to be back. But I've just kind of, and I swear, you know, in his words, he said, I've lost my smile.
He did.
So
it's sad and it's scary. I don't know. I mean, we know he's a huge HBK fan, so I don't know if there's something to do with that, but he He did. He's lost his smile.
Yeah.
I guess he's out searching for it. I don't know.
You know, I get it. I get it. You know, he does some other shit podcast on Mondays, you know, and has all this other stuff going on. So I get it. You know, he's a busy guy. But, you know, when you lose your smile, you know, you got to go find it. So we're just hoping that Matt is taking the night to, you know, do a little bit of soul searching and look inside and find his smile. And maybe he'll be back for a second run. We don't know. We don't know.
We can only hope.
So we're going to also
know his eye was drifting. It's weird.
Unrelated. A little bit. But regardless, Kate and I are here on Wednesday night. We're going to talk about everything AEW. We got a whole list of stuff to talk about. So we're going to dig in. We're going to have our buddy Ryan Schlong come on for his little segment. So stay tuned. And also I suggest if you're listening to this or watching us on Facebook Live, come back and check out the podcast version, which will have some production put in. I think you'll enjoy it because we won't get to do it live here tonight. But, and I hate to break this wall down as I've already done once. I've done one wall. I might as well break down a second one. I can't play the audio, but we have our new, I've been promising for weeks. And of course, the night Matt loses his smile, we can't play it, but we have Ryan Schlong's intro to his segment. So we'll get it in the podcast version, but I think you should check it out. Anyway.
Oh, we'll get it in.
Oh, it won't take a lot of effort, but we'll get it in. It's just the tip, a little bit of the tip.
A little bit of the tip of the schlong.
So Kate and I are here putting on a brave face, getting us through another Wednesday night in the world of AEW. And I think the first thing we need to talk about, and we're kind of going to go a little out of order here because we want to kind of save the pay-per-view for our main discussion. But I really quick, Kate, want to go over Friday night because we're not going to break the whole card down and stuff like that. I just do want to talk a little bit about Friday night because it was the go-home dynamite to the pay-per-view. And they had to do it at 10 o'clock, you know, assumingly so that they wouldn't compete with SmackDown. But this is also going to be their Friday night slot in August. Now, it should be noted that this, I believe, only netted like 526,000 in their key demographic, which is not good. But there's a couple things here I think we have to remember. It's a holiday weekend. People probably weren't home on a Friday night watching wrestling, unless you're me. But it is what it is. The go-home show didn't really draw that well, but I really wanted to bring it up, Kate, because this was the first time we saw them back in front of a full-blown live audience. And first of all, Kate, did you get to see the show or any parts of the show?
I did see it. And it's funny that you say 500,000 wasn't a strong number because I was like, oh, I actually think that's pretty good for 10 o'clock on a Friday, especially considering that out of the gate, TNT was only expecting Dynamite to do 500,000. Considering, and like you said, everything that it was competing with, I also have a feeling that I was like, I wonder what the true numbers are going to be for the show, because I think a lot of people probably watched it not live. Like, if anybody's going to watch something on demand, the Friday night 1 hour wrestling show from 10 p.m I feel right. Like it's certainly going to be something that a lot more people are going to like go and check out after. So I actually thought over 500,000 was a pretty strong number considering what they were up against, but being in front of a live crowd was awesome. Like, I got so used to not having live crowd because like 75% of this company's existence at least has been in the pandemic. So I was like acclimated to it, but man, oh man, was it like unreal to have a live crowd. And then the crowd at the pay-per-view was just fire the whole time. And I have given up on Mondays for Raw, but I was flipping through and I, for like a little bit, was threw it on. I gave up somewhere around when a wine guy beat Shayna Baszler, but like them going seeing the Thunderdome after that, which has actually been pretty cool so far, but like after seeing a live crowd the night before, I was like, oh, it is really impossible to like go back to that dynamic after. So all that to say, having a live crowd on Fridays again, on Friday night, seeing that return was awesome. And even having it for like Dark and Dark Elevation, which we'll get into later, was just like an entirely different energy for those shows. It was so much fun.
Yeah, you know, the crazy thing was the amount of times that commentary was like, well, and this goes for Dark too, so we'll get to it, you know, when we have Schlong on. The amount of times that they really kind of mentioned, like, they've never wrestled in front of the live crowd. Like, this is the first time this person is wrestling in front of the live crowd for AEW. So it was just amazing to think back. Like, this company was pretty young to get into a pandemic and not have a live crowd. And so many people never had a live audience. Brody never wrestled in front of a live AEW audience. You know, I mean,
Right. But like, even the whole, like that whole Matt Hardy run, which was the same time until now. So think about all the talent that they've signed since then. Eddie Kingston's entire AEW life has not been a crowd. Like, it is bananas to think about it. Miro, like, is a champion. And then Sunday and Friday, his first time's in front of an AEW crowd. Like, the amount of returns and debuts in front of a crowd that there were, like you said, like, how many times did we hear that on Friday and also on Sunday, and what a difference it made. And just, it's supposed to be, live wrestling is supposed to be in front of a crowd. Like,
sure,
it was awesome. I was so excited about that.
So we're not going to go again. We're not going to go through the whole card. Like, we're not going to break it down because it doesn't make sense. We've got the pay-per-view to talk about, but a couple things I do want to bring up that I've seen some chatter online and, you know, kind of going back and forth is, I think that everybody needs to keep in mind, right, that this was total fan service. Like, this was to get pops with a live crowd, to have a crowd cheering, to put some wrestlers out there who haven't necessarily been back in front of a crowd or even in front of a crowd at all. So yeah, like, we got, you know, Darby Allin and Cesar Bononi, right? Like, why does it really matter? Like, we had them back in front of a crowd, you know, Joey Janela and Hangman Page. Now, they had a prior match, and this was kind of like a return, like a second bout for them. So it kind of made sense. But with everything going on with Hangman, you know, you didn't really need it. But again, like, to me, I went into this not thinking too much of it. And I honestly didn't even remember the live crowd was going to be there. So, you know, to me, I kind of went into this knowing this is kind of a throwaway show. Like, it's going to just be anything to get us to the pay-per-view. So I think that was something I was surprised that so many people were like, the show blew because it didn't do anything. It's like, well, what did you expect? It's the Friday night 10 o'clock show going into a pay-per-view.
Because, like, technically it was a go-home, right? But it, right, like, wasn't really their go-home. So I get the expectations of, like, it's the go-home before the pay-per-view, and it's, like, not really doing anything. But it's also, like, we have to be realistic about the time that it went on. The other thing that I thought was, it felt like maybe a situation where they realized that maybe someone is watching SmackDown, and they hunted around for more wrestling, and then they came across it. Like, to see Janela versus Hangman is actually pretty cool, right? They're two totally different characters.
Yeah,
they both work very different styles. Like, that's something cool to see. SmackDown, oh my god, this Miro guy who was Rusev is defending for the championship. Like, that is cool. So and anytime Darby's on the screen, like, he's just bananas. So that's always going to grab someone's attention between his look and his recklessness in the ring. So that was my thing with it, was it going to advance any storylines? No, I think the proper go home was the previous week, but I think that this was probably capitalizing on, hey, maybe some fans are clicking around that were just watching wrestling. They come across a totally different program, and we're going to introduce them to some of the top guys in the company.
Right.
To me, what the whole Miro defending his title thing was about, in my opinion, was like, maybe if new people are watching, they're going to recognize this guy and they're going to stop for a second and see what's up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and there were definitely like Hangman got cut open, so he looked like a madman setting up the whole thing with the, you know, Brian Cage and Team Taz. And then they did some other segments that you knew were just like perfect for a live crowd. Right. So, you know, they did the weigh-in. Okay. Now I had issues with the weigh-in. Like it was long, like they should have had it a little more tightened up, but I think being back in front of a crowd for the first time, like maybe some jitters, who knows? Either way, I didn't love the segment for the little things that kind of went wrong, but I loved it for the fact that it was in front of a live crowd and it did exactly what it needed it to do. It brought out, you know, a go-go on one side, the anti-American, and, you know, the American dream with the Nightmare Family on the other side. It had a big fight feel. It did exactly what it was supposed to do, you know? The other segment that was perfect for the live crowd, and it worked for me, was Orange Cassidy saying he's going to fight Sunday, you know? He comes out with his envelope for Kenny, and Kenny opens it, and it's the shredded contract, and, you know, he hits the orange punch on him and Pac. So those two segments alone were perfect for me. Again, withstanding the things that didn't work with the weigh-in, they were perfect for me because the live crowd reaction was totally worth it.
And the shot that it ended on, this is where I was thinking about getting that SmackDown crowd, right? If they were still watching at midnight or whenever the hell it was, you're watching the pinnacle take a piss on live television. You're seeing Tully Blanchard. You're seeing Dean get tied up against a ring post, and you have the Inner Circle talking about how they're going to break up. If I haven't watched before, and I am usually watching a PG product, and I see a bunch of guys tying someone to a goalpost, kicking the shit out of them, it's someone I recognize. You have MJF jaw-jocking, and you see Jericho. Like, that might grab your attention. Like, I totally get where they were going with that. I also just liked that segment in general.
Sure.
Especially because the booking was reversed of what I thought it was going to be on Sunday. I thought this really was like an Inner Circle goodbye. And then you have the heels ruining that. And it felt pretty sincere to me. So, I thought it was not the best episode of Dynamite. I didn't think it was going to be the best episode of Dynamite. It would have been a shame if it was the best episode of Dynamite. But I do get the idea that, like, it's a go home to a pay-per-view. They just got screwed by the NBA schedule. That's all. That sucks. So
yeah,
it just totally was what it was. I get why people were kind of annoyed, but I think we have to be realistic with what we expect. They're going to be fighting 2 days later. You cannot abuse them.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And you mentioned the Inner Circle segment. It was great to see Bischoff in front of a live crowd on TNT, you know, where he had been with WCW. So that was cool. It's always great to see Bischoff come out. And we did find out, you know, kind of what's going on with Jade Cargill during this episode. Apparently, Smart Mark Sterling is going to be her manager. We can talk about that if you want. I'd rather not. But, you know, they did do a couple
what
things.
What the fuck are they doing?
I don't know.
Why the fuck would Jade Cargill, A, need anybody to try and score a match on Dynamite when she's that bitch and has just wrecked everybody in her path? What would be the, like, oh, how do I get on this TV program? Which she's fucking destroying everyone. And how is this little twerp of a lawyer? I hate this. I hate this. This might be my least favorite thing going on in AEW. And it's a goddamn shame because Jade is a star. And unless she beats the shit out of him really soon, I think this is like just such a step backwards. You cannot have someone going around talking about how they're that bitch and then be like, but I need this guy to get on TV. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely atrocious. I hate everything about it.
Yeah, I don't love it either. I think you nailed pretty much everything, Kate. And the only thing that to me that kind of was funny was how Matt Hardy came in trying to sweet talk her, and Sterling walked in and was like, I represent her. And by the way, you take 30 off the top, you know, I do it differently. You know, she basically keeps everything until, you know, I book a deal. So I thought that was funny. Maybe they're trying to do something with, you know, the Hardy office or the Hardy family. Maybe they'll have something with her and the bunny. Who the hell knows? But, you know, they did advance a few things on Friday night that they said they would. You know, so we'll see what happens. And we'll talk about it later when we talk about Double or Nothing. But they did, you know, it is knowledge that they will be airing. Obviously, there was no Dynamite tonight. Dynamite will be on Friday night at 10 o'clock again. So it's another late night of wrestling on TNT. So we will talk about the card. Excuse me. We'll preview the card. It looks actually like it's going to be a pretty good card. So we'll get there in a little bit. But we do want to talk about Dark, because I don't know if many people know Kate with the holiday on Monday. To be honest, I honestly didn't even think about Elevation. And then, you know, just kind of hit me like Tuesday morning. I was like, oh yeah, was there Elevation? And there was. It was actually a pretty good show. And then, you know, Dark was on as it normally would be on Tuesday nights. So we're going to welcome in Ryan Schlong for his special segment, A Little Tip of the Schlong.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourself for a little tip of the schlong.
Ryan, welcome, buddy. Welcome to A Little Tip of the Schlong, where we discuss Dark, Elevation, and Dark Unleavened, regular Dark. It's like Dark Light. It's like...
I laugh at Dark Unleavened every time.
It's like Dark Light and Dark Heavy, you know, like Bud Light and Bud Heavy, but there for Dark. And, you know what's crazy is that Matt lost his smile, but watched both of these shows this week. But I will tell you this. I watched both of these shows this week. This is actually like the second time in 2 weeks that I've actually gotten to see both of these shows. So we can discuss a little bit. Kate clearly didn't watch anything. She's going to be looking over your shoulder, Ryan, as you're filling in the Scantron test and just copying your answers.
I did watch for once because they weren't 97 hours long. Let's start talking with that, is that they weren't marathon episode, which, as we said, like, they're going back on the road. Tony Khan confirmed that actually in the presser before the pay-per-view, that the format is going to change. I'm assuming that means get shorter and start using talent from whatever town they're in while they travel. And so I think they were trying to, like, let's pare these ones down before we hit the road so that we get a good feel for, like, what these episodes are going to look like going forward. And it was really, really refreshing because it didn't feel like a chore. So yeah. I actually was able to watch both of them. It was very, very manageable this week.
Yeah, and I don't remember which one, and we'll start with Elevation, clearly, Ryan, because it comes first in the week, but I know that maybe it was Dark. One of these shows, they used the matches from the Fan Fest that took place on Saturday, and then some of the other show, or maybe both of the shows, I think maybe they did a couple of the matches before the pay-per-view, you know, with the kind of live crowd there. So it was kind of a mixture of both, but there were a few kind of odd things from Elevation that they threw in the middle. So why don't you take us through a little bit of Elevation? We can all talk about it.
So the one thing, I couldn't figure out which was filmed where, just like you said, because they had... Elevation had the bigger crowd, and I couldn't tell if that's because it was before Double or Nothing or because it was the Fan Fest and people hung around. I guess we'll never know. Just curious, was it early goers or whatever? But they definitely did some weird things, and I'll start there because I need to get these out of the way. For whatever reason, I see a finger.
I just want to say really quick, I believe now that it's now it's coming back to me. Fuck you, Kate. It's coming back to me. I believe it was actually Dark that Taz and Excalibur were saying, you know, you might notice that the crowd is like small in some spots because it was Fan Fest and they were doing signings and like they were doing the figure releases, which we'll talk about later. Kate, you love figure talk. So I think it was Elevation might have taken place at Double or Nothing. And then maybe some of it they even taped at other points in time, just because, like, you know, Jungle Boy wrestled at. Actually, his match on Elevation had a huge crowd, so he probably did double duty on Sunday. And again, we're going to talk about that later because he was in the Battle Royal, but he had to wrestle before Double or Nothing in front of that live crowd because there was a huge pop for him. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It did hit my brain. They had mentioned it. I remember Taz specifically talking about like their signings and there's other stuff going on, so people are kind of coming in and out.
No, that makes a lot of sense, especially because of the pop some of these guys got. You had an excited crowd, so it would make sense as these are the people waiting for the whole event. So to go to that weird, those two weird moments in the middle of Elevation, they had two interviews, one with Jungle Boy and one with Dustin Rhodes. Both were in response to Double or Nothing, Jungle Boy's win and Dustin, and I guess Cody's win, and Dustin plays into that. But for whatever reason, they decided to have them in the empty stadium, arena, whatever you want to call it. And it was weird. That should have just been done backstage. It felt out of place. You had just shown us all these crowds and then to go back to an empty, quiet arena. I mean, I know you couldn't do it in front of the crowds because you'd spoil the pay-per-view, but backstage wouldn't have spoiled it for anyone. It's actually so notable that Matt was in the Discord being like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Why would you do it this way? It really did screw up the pace, I think, of the show because they just... it's so uncommon and it just like, what, where are we?
Yeah. And the weird thing too, is the fact that they did those two promo interviews, which were actually pretty good. Like they were good. It was just awkward. It was in front of nobody. But then you had other video packages. You had Thunder Rosa doing a pre-cut promo on Britt Baker where, you know, it was clearly done prior to the pay-per-view knowing what the outcome was going to be. You had the Varsity Blondes do a promo leading, you know, up to later that evening. And then you had Penta and Alex Abrahantes cut a backstage promo. So I'm with you. Like, why wouldn't you just do those backstage when you've got all these other people doing pre-tape backstage things? It just was weird.
My guess is they probably thought it would look really cool, like, because you have sets and ring and whatever, but yeah. And also some of the post-show interviews that they did, like, against the stadium wall on Double or Nothing looked like Tony Khan was standing on the Seinfeld stage or something. So they got to work out some of those backdrops. That is a weird thing, but I'm with you. It definitely made it feel like disjointed. Whereas because of what it is, it's usually just feels like it's one very flowing product. So yeah, that was weird. I'm with you guys.
Yeah, a little weird, but there was a lot of good action actually on that show. Go ahead, Kate. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just popped into my head that like, it's so refreshing. We have a product where they can pre-cut stuff in reaction to the pay-per-view because they're not going to just suddenly change their creative plans.
Right.
Like, they could never do that at other places, particularly WWE, because Vince is always, like, rewriting things, like, 2 minutes before they happen.
Yeah.
So it's just really refreshing that they could actually pre-tape things.
Yeah, and all the pre-tape stuff worked. The Thunder Rosa promo was good. The Varsity Blondes promo building to their match was good. What was the last one? I said it and I forgot. The Penta one was actually very well done. He did it basically in Spanish, and then Abrahantes translated it. And we'll talk about translations a little bit later. But go ahead, Ryan. I know I was kind of leading into... basically there was some really good action that night, but what else did you want to say?
I just, because we talked about how weird they were, I don't want to gloss over that I like the story they're telling with Christian and Jungle Boy.
Yes.
Where they're using Christian to get Jungle Boy over, like Christian coming out basically saying, you know, I knew you liked to compete, I didn't know you hated to lose, but now I see that. It's a good way of like saying, well, why is he taking this jump forward? And you can sit like giving a reason. It's a small piece of logic, but they're using Christian to clearly get Jungle Boy over, and I love that. And it obviously, since Christian could still go, there's matches to be had, but I don't want the weirdness of where it took place to take away from the story they're trying. And then I will say, I love Abrahantes as a geeky sidekick. It's grown on me.
Yeah, if this is kind of what he's going to do, I'm all about it. You know, I think it makes sense when you do it the way they did it, right? Like Penta maybe says like two words in English and then he speaks Spanish and then Abrahantes does the translation. Like that's how it should be if you're going to do it. It doesn't make sense when Penta does half of his promo or interview in English and then Abrahantes is just kind of there. So it makes sense if you're going to use him as a translator. And I agree, it works very well. And actually, he had a match with Jack Evans, and obviously Abrahantes was kind of there. You know, Penta tossed his glove and Abrahantes caught it, and commentary, you know, kind of joked about it. So it all worked perfectly, but I'm kind of getting ahead. Why don't you take us through some of the matches? I think it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 matches on Elevation. And I think they all actually were really good. And I think it's partially has to do with being in front of that live crowd. And I was saying it before, Ryan, if you were listening to Kate, the fact that they made mention numerous times, like, this is the first time the Acclaimed are in front of a full live audience here at AEW. This is the first time that, you know, Pillman and Griff Garrison are in front of, you know, a full live audience. Like, it was amazing to think how many of these guys and ladies haven't been in front of a really full house for AEW.
Especially the ones that you're not sure of the reaction they're getting. And if the way I feel about them is the way everyone does. So I'm going to, you know, I think we all knew the Acclaim was getting over and they had a great match and Max Caster had another great rap and I could compliment them for weeks, but you see them on Dynamite. You knew,
right,
they were there's no way they're not going to, but like I have one to highlight, like Layla Hirsch, who I know Kate's very big on. She got a pretty decent cheer. I mean, for someone who's only really been on Dark and only had a few Dynamite matches, it's good to know that all the time she's putting there, people are seeing what I see as someone who, you know, has good matches and could be something. And I obviously Thunder Rosa got a pop. I mean, she's Thunder Rosa. How does she not? But there was a couple, Tay Conte, there was a couple where you're like, oh, people do see these guys and gals as like what I see them as. And I think that was, you guys are pointing out, I missed it. I didn't realize how much I missed it, but it helped when I'm watching a match to know that like these are going to be someone. And then I feel like Layla was the one that really caught my attention because I didn't know what kind of reaction she'd get at all. I was really dreading that she'd come out to Crickets because I'm a big fan of hers. And she got, you know, I don't want to say like she didn't get Jungle Boy level pop, but she got cheers. And then for what she's been doing, I think that's huge. And she had a great match. I think her matches are great. And I'm gonna stick with the women then. Tay Conte running out and then winning, the best things I've seen. She was so, I think that was as genuine as she gets, how excited she was to wrestle in front of all those people. Because hers at that point, I think you were probably near the capacity crowd for Double or Nothing based on the time. And yeah, her excitement was just through the roof. So I think those are the two people that stand out. And then the match, just because I'll go real quick and let you guys have your pieces, is JD Drake versus Jungle Boy. JD Drake is the star of Dark.
Yeah.
And that match was amazing. And so like the.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was going to, I'm sorry, Kate, I'm going to jump to you in 1 second. I was just going to say, I think we should also just be kind of clear with this is they haven't been in front of completely dead houses, right? Like they've had a live audience in some capacity at Dynamite. So somebody who's been on Dynamite, like the Acclaimed and Layla Hirsch, like, you know, a few times Layla's been on Dynamite. You do have a small sampling to kind of feel out, like, is somebody as over as we think they are? But you never know, man, when you're, you know, quadrupling the capacity or more than that, right? Like now you have a larger sampling. So it very easily could have been Crickets for Layla Hirsch. We could have heard a smattering of applause, but yeah, she, you know, I think everybody did really well being in front of this capacity audience for the first time in over a year. So it is just funny about, you don't realize you miss it because we've just kind of been in it so long, right? And now that the live crowd's back and, you know, singing along to Jungle Boy's theme. I'm not going to name names here, but somebody who says his music isn't serious and it's not going to put him over. Man, that couldn't be any worse of a take than I could think of. But Kate, I'm sorry, I totally cut you off. What were you going to call out?
All good. We have Joe Evans in the Facebook chat said JD Drake gives him Trevor Murdoch vibes. Yup. couldn't agree with that anymore. It was really nice. And I think it helps the energy of something like a Dark Elevation or Unleavened to have a live crowd there, because this is a little more exhibitional in a way and less storyline driven, though there is continuity and other storylines building up or whatever. But I think this actually helps them just as much as it does a Dynamite. And to Ryan's point, I know who's over in my living room. You guys know too, Eddie Kingston, Layla. Hearing Layla Hirsch get a real pop, Matt's not going to love this. I really like Robin Renegade. And I don't hate her name. I don't hate Robin Renegade as a name. I actually think it works pretty all right. But yeah, it was really nice for the energy of this show. We talked about it with the Friday night show and the pay-per-view. But man, this was really nice. Varsity Blondes with a huge pop too. They're over like Rover. But I'm with you as far as match of the night. It's got to be JD Drake and Jungle Boy. That was just fantastic. I never would have thought JD Drake would be in something like the Wingmen at all. He feels just like a serious 80s brute to me, but you put him in this. This is such a fun idea. I love it. I think it's such a great use of everybody in it, especially Peter Avalon is like criminally underrated, but I loved that. And to your point about Tay Conti, like, if you're not just in love with her, I don't know what's wrong with you. You don't believe in fun. Like, she's just so infectious. She was so excited, like, sincerely. Like, that was not just for the match. Like, it's not like she has a feud with this person going on, right? So she was just so excited. And I actually saw her work heel at an NXT house show, like, probably 4 years ago at this point. She was a fantastic little heel. This was before she was on NXT TV at all too. So I think she can work either side of the coin, but man, her energy is so infectious and her pump kicks are ridiculous, man. I buy it. Yeah. Her judo throws are so interesting. Easily one of, if not the most improved wrestler on the roster, man or woman. Like, she has just grown so, so much in front of our eyes. It's really awesome to see. So Tay was like my favorite highlight of the night, but as far as like match of the night, it doesn't get much better than JD Drake versus Jungle Boy. That's free TV, I'll take it. Free YouTube TV, I'll definitely take it.
Yeah, and I do want to if you're not following Tay Conti on social media, holy moly, the thirst trap queen, my goodness.
If you're not following Tay Conti on social media, it's because you're a straight woman and you're jealous, and I get it. There's just like there's nothing I can do, no matter how hard I work, that's gonna look that good.
Listen, it's like it's just like, okay, listen, the same thing happens though. I do want to say this though, Kate, the same thing happens on the male side, because like, sure. You know, I'm gonna use let's say, oh my god, I'm gonna forget his name. Fuck. SNL. He does Weekend Update and he's married to Scarlett Johansson.
Colin Jost.
Colin Jost. That's it. Like, somebody like Colin Jost, you're good looking. You're smart because you went to like Harvard or some shit like that. And you're funny. Fuck off, man. Like, that's just not fair.
You know what he have?
What?
A dangly. He doesn't have a dangly.
I don't have my dangly in tonight, but I did rock it. Kate saw it live and in person over the weekend. I just didn't have time to throw in my dangly tonight. It was bothering me the other day, so I took it out. But anyway, the last thing I want to say about Elevation, and then we'll move out to regular Dark, Unleavened Dark, is the fact that we are very critical here and I'm sure everybody is, it's not just us, about the women's division in AEW. And it was great to see there were one, two, three, four women's matches. So they had half the card in front of the live audience, and the live audience was into every single women's match that was on the card. I mean, it was really easy to see. Like, they were into Layla and Robin Renegade. They were totally into Thunder Rosa. The tag match, Big Swole and Red Velvet with Nyla and the Bunny, crowd was into that one. And then obviously we talked about Tay Conti and Ashley D'Ambrose. Crowd was totally into it. So it's good to see. It looks like the crowd is now invested in this women's division and what is being put in front of them. So it's really good to see that, because prior to the pandemic, it was sort of a mixed bag in front of the live audience with these women's matches. And this is just Dark. So if they're putting this on Dark and the crowd is into it, maybe that bodes well for the future of this division. Yes, Kate.
I mean, that was actually more the problem, was the matches you were getting on Dark were better than you were getting on Dynamite there for a while. But to your point, I really think that Unsanctioned Lights Out match did what the tournament was supposed to do and didn't do, which was reboot this division. I feel like it's actually headed in a much, much stronger place. We've seen a lot more consistency, a lot more consistent storytelling, as well as like good in-ring talent. So fingers crossed that it sticks around.
Yes, Ryan.
As your weekly Dark reporter, I thought about this the other day when we were talking about in the Discord how the women's division has improved. And I actually think when they realized somewhere early on that they had made mistakes and didn't have the depth they needed when all those people went out for injuries, I think that's when they started putting a lot of women's matches on Dark. I think it's for that purpose, to start building the women up, because you have people like Layla Hirsch, Red Velvet, Kylan King. I'm going to blank on some, but all these people started on Dark and now they're moving up to Dynamite roles. And I think that was the purpose. And you're seeing now the fruits of that labor come to fruition, because now they're getting cheers on Dark, and hopefully they start calling some of them up to Dynamite regularly in matches that don't have to just be Britt Baker or Shida, in their own feuds. And that's, I think, I could be giving them more credit than they deserve, but it seems like right when the division got weak, they just flooded Dark with a ton of women's matches. And a lot of those women have hung around. Tay Conti is one of them. She was on in the tag tournament. She did a bunch of Dark matches. And someone there back there must have realized, hey, we need talent, flood Dark, and they'll build up. And it's worked wonderfully.
Yeah, I mean, it's really boding well for the future. And then even just moving into Dark. So it was under an hour show again, Unleavened Dark, excuse me. It was under an hour, and this was, I think, clearly the one that was in front of the partial audience, only because it was done during the fan fest and there was so much other stuff going on. That card too was, five matches, and two of them were women's matches. And we'll obviously talk about it. We'll get Ryan's take on it and we'll give you our thoughts too. But, Ryan, why don't you kind of take us through some of your bullets on the episode, and then we can talk about the matches.
So one of my big bullets was that it was under an hour, and I hope that's what sticks going forward. You know, there was a Jungle Boy interview where they actually let him talk, which I think, even though he's not the best talker in the business, let him talk. It goes to the Shida arguments we've had on Dynamite, where if you don't let a guy talk or have someone talk for them, the character gets forgotten, no matter how over they are. And then I just have to point out, Taz and Excalibur are wonderful in commentary. They put a vibe to the show that this show deserves. It's a casual, it's not a main event. It's not Double or Nothing. It should be more casual, and they're joking, laughing throughout. And I just feel like it actually makes the show way more enjoyable to have that level of commentary involved. So I just always want to highlight them and how much they add to it. And one point, and this, I don't know if you guys will talk about some of the breaking news of the day, but I know over the course of time, I'm not that the business decisions of companies will get brought up in the finances. You know, Dark Elevation has 200 and something thousand views. This has 153 as of today, thousand views. There's money in YouTube in that. So people forget, like, stuff like this, even though they're paying these independent, they're not doing it for free. They're making money. So yep. I just, when people wonder, can they like, oh, they only have a one show, maybe another. I don't think people give enough credit for what YouTube can do. You know, there's been empires built on YouTube. Now these aren't obviously millions of views, but they're still solid every week. They're getting something for it.
And what a contribution to the industry. Like all these, now that they travel, I'm sure they're going to be using the local talent from all the cities they go to. So it's like, not only do they, and like you said, I think it was up to like 265,000 views, which isn't chump change, especially on social. It's pretty damn good. But like at the same time, because it's like almost TV or whatever, everywhere they go, the local talent from those towns is going to be more over and their booking rates are going to go up. So I love it, not only as something for the AEW ecosystem, but I think for the industry as a whole, it's just like a really wonderful, healthy thing. So, and I'm completely with you on commentary. Taz is such a treasure. I love it. And I've said before, it feels like they're just like on a field trip. Like they are just like letting loose. It is a blast to listen to them.
You know, I want to piggyback on the commentary thing before we get into some of these matches, because it's not a large card. But the best thing I think with the commentary, yeah, they keep it light and they joke around and that's fun. But what I think is awesome is like, guys, Taz is supposed to be a heel and he doesn't have to be a heel the whole time. Right? Like he doesn't have to play the heel the whole time. He can laugh and he can crack some jokes, and then he can make some really like offhanded kind of heelish remarks, but he's not constantly the heel, which is awesome, because in other companies or in other promotions, whatever, you know, it's like, hey, you're the heel guy all the time and you're the face guy all the time, and like there's no kind of gray area. It's just kind of refreshing to me that it's like, hey, Taz is supposed to be a heel. And even when Jericho was doing the commentary during the pandemic on Dynamite, you know, he was a heel in the Inner Circle at that time and he wasn't always the heel, and that's fantastic. I think it just speaks volumes to the fact that, like, listen, don't we're not fucking idiots. You know what I mean? Like, we know that these guys aren't evil and mean all the time. Like, just let them be themselves.
It's fantastic.
Okay, Ryan.
We have a comment on Facebook from Kevin that I just wanted to say, from not KJG Kevin, from Kevin. I don't want to say your last name, but different Kevin, who said that he misses the negative one cameos. And I hear you, but I'm assuming they're going to be back because he has his own entrance music now, which is like the coolest thing ever. And I think makes you the coolest little kid in the world. But yeah, I miss those two. They're super fun. It's so heartwarming whenever he's around and on. But they've been pushing 10 a little bit, so I'm sure they seem to have quite a kinship. I'm sure we'll be seeing negative one back at some point.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure it was a crazy weekend. I think he was there in some capacity. Maybe they just didn't want to put him in front of a camera because there's so much other stuff to cram in. But yeah, he does have his own music and they are invested in that kid and the Lee clan. So yeah, we'll get to see him hopefully again, not too far into the future.
Ryan said that. I didn't catch this. Did you guys? That Taz said he'd never seen Aaron Solo's finisher before, which is a pedigree. I didn't catch that. That's the funniest shit ever. I love it.
My favorite thing about that was he was like, you know, he's got a lot of names. Is he Allen Angels? Is he Allen Five? Is he Five Angels? And then Excalibur was like, but you're okay with Preston Vance, huh? And he was like, well, yeah, that's his name. Good, it was shit. Just funny. So Ryan, five matches on this card. Why don't you run us through some of the highlights here?
I'll go quickly down each because there's only five. The first match was the Wingmen versus the Gun Club, with the Gun Club winning. I have this right in my notes. I get the Gun Club are on Dynamite because they're with the Cody QT angle. But the Wingmen are the stars. I don't care what anyone tells me. Every time I see the Wingmen, I'm happy. Then you have Chris Statlander versus Kate's new favorite, Robin Renegade, who apparently is dating Angels, by the way. So maybe she'll come around more because there's a connection there. So, Statlander's great. So and Chuck and Trent came out in silver pants for supporting Taz and Excalibur had a long conversation about their pants, which I really enjoyed.
Yes.
Then you had the Dark Order versus TH2 and Serpentico. I guess I don't know where Luther was. It's a fun match. I mean, I like the Dark Order, and Stu Grayson impresses me every single time I see him wrestle.
He's amazing.
He's underutilized. I mean, he could do so much. And then the person whose praises I will sing every time I talk about Dark is Diamante. I don't care. She is always the star. Her and JD Drake are the two stars on each roster. I mean, Red Velvet's great. I actually really like Red Velvet, and she's over. But Diamante just always puts on a good match. She's always entertaining, and they just don't let her win. And she had this splash off the mat onto Red Velvet where it must have been one of the stiffest splashes I've ever seen, where she just tucked her arms and went dead weight. But it was so cool looking. It was like a standing version of the coffin drop, except onto her stomach. But I hope that they haven't signed her for contract reasons, having to do, she wants to go somewhere else and get side pay, because she's just wonderful. And then you had another amazing main event featuring Jungle Boy versus Bear Bronson. Mm-hmm. And I loved that they've been putting, you know, first you had JD Drake in Elevation. Now you have Bear Bronson, who's even bigger in regular Dark. I'll let you see, tell Kate the joke of what it is, 'cause she likes that. Him going against the two big boys, I think that's great. It shows that he can do it, because I think when you have a guy that he's so skinny that if you don't let, he's got the hype but no weight to him, if you don't let him fight bigger guys, it's gonna always be like, well, he's just a cruiserweight, or you need to show that he can hang. And I really enjoyed that match.
Yeah, I do want to say too, I don't remember if it was here or if it was on Elevation, but commentary at one point made mention that Jungle Boy's like record since 2020 was almost a mirror image of Kenny Omega. So that as kind of like a backstory as to the match that he, well, you know, we didn't talk about Double or Nothing yet, but he's going to get a match at against the champ. So it kind of is another interesting layer to that story. You know, Jungle Boy, they also mentioned that he has the most matches in AEW of any other wrestler on the roster. I'm assuming that's because he's doing tag matches on Dark, on Dynamite, singles matches on Dark and Dynamite, you know, plus pay-per-views. So, I mean, man, if there's one thing that I learned from this weekend, from the live crowd and the way that they're booking Jungle Boy, is they've got to put a goddamn belt on him quickly. I don't care. I mean, listen, do I think he's going to take the world title off Kenny Omega? No, I think he's going to have a great match, but I don't think he's taking that title off him. I think they need to put a belt on him, like the TNT championship, soon, because he is over. And I'm not saying you have to rocket him to the moon, but I think you need to continue to put some steam behind him and keep him up, because he's over, man. The crowd loves him. And, you know, his theme music really helps get the crowd behind him. But yeah, kid, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think you wanted to say, you wanted to talk about something in here. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know if you want to say something. I'm sorry, Kate.
No, a few things. I completely agree on the Wingmen versus Gun Club. Just let the Wingmen win everything. They're cracking me up. Statlander, again, I like Robin Renegade a lot. It's always good to see Chris Stat back. Love Silver Pants. Why not? A couple of things. So pretty much everyone in the Dark Order, like, does this thing where, because they're funny, every time they get in the ring, I'm a little bit surprised at how good they are. And I know how good they are, but what you said about Stu Grayson reminded me of that. And even though they ripped off our name, I really, really like it when I see them in the ring. Stu Grayson, out of any of them, as far as like singles runs, I think he could absolutely have an incredible singles run. No reason the other guys couldn't. I just feel like he just, such like an ass kicker. I really, really think he could. But yeah, and that's kind of what's fun to me about the Dark Order is, and we'll talk about this later when we get into the Federation's releases, but I feel like you throw someone in there that's silly, they fit right in, like a Colt Cabana or whoever. You want to make them serious heels, I feel like it just takes one guy and you could snap and you have like either five faces or five heels or whatever it is, like in an instant. So there's just such versatility with stables in general, which is why AEW is built on them, but specifically within the Dark Order, I think you have so many personalities, so many ring styles, and so much ability to work either in a tag team or on your own. It's really, really impressive. And I think that sometimes gets lost because they're fucking hilarious. And I had said this before too, that the Diamante versus Red Velvet, when I saw that splash off the top rope, I literally laughed out loud at the fact that Ivelisse was like, Thunder Rosa's work too stiff for her. Diamante works fucking stiff, people. I think she could handle what Thunder Rosa was doing. Holy shit, that was stiff. But I agree, Ryan. I think she might be losing because I think there's going to be a time where they do what they do really well and they just turn up the heat on her and the next thing you know, she'll be in the rankings. Like, I think she's at a place where she's not totally winning yet because I think it's gonna suddenly mean a lot when she does. I think ring wise she's figured out, her character is figured out, but like getting there a little bit more. So I don't think it's that she's just there to work. I think they're just gonna really move her along once they decide to solidify her a little bit further. And man, I'm with you, it's really, really fun to watch Jungle Boy work with just about anybody on this roster. Maybe they're going to come after the Jacksons for the tag belts. I'm really hoping that's Santana and Ortiz. I think that's a situation where you could have a face versus face matchup if you wanted to do that, like Santana and Ortiz versus Lucha Boy. Lucha Boy. Did not mean to give them a new tag team name. I think that's a situation where like what they're doing is so different, you could still advance a storyline without it being like, I'm a heel, I'm a face. But yeah, man, he is a star and he is over like Rover. I think you want Miro to have a little bit of a run and I think he's not going to beat Kenny Omega. So I don't know what you do as far as a title, unless they get another one on Rampage, which we can talk about later. But if there's like a TBS championship or something, I don't think they'll do that. That's cheesy as shit. But, if there's another title coming with another hour of programming, I could certainly see that going to a guy like Jungle Boy.
Yeah, just because you mentioned it, I think Cody came out and said, like, there's a 99.9% chance that that TNT title is just going to stay the TNT title and they're not going to do anything. So we'll see. Listen, August is a long time away. Maybe not so much away, a long time, but there's a few months. My one thing I want to close out before we get, the last kind of final thoughts from Schlong is, you brought up Santana and Ortiz. The way that, that the Dark Order works, it's just amazing to me how they can all work with each other so seamlessly and look like they're a tag team that works every week together. It's just amazing. But for me, premier team in the Dark Order is, Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. And can you imagine if they somehow get a long program between them and Santana and Ortiz? Oh my goodness, the matches I think that they could put on would be amazing. So fantasy booking on my part, let's get to Evil Uno and Stu Grayson versus Santana and Ortiz for a long program. And I'm with you on Diamante. I think that there's something there. I've liked her since she's come in. So hopefully they can give her a little bit of a push somewhere on main television rather than, you know, her old tag team matches that they used to put on with her and Ivelisse. Hey, you know, what's funny, Kate, is remember we went and met Thunder Rosa over in my neck of the woods. They're going to have Ivelisse. They're going to have Ivelisse there if you want to go meet her and cry to her as well.
I don't think I'd cry to her unless there's some very like emotionally connective Talk is Jericho episode coming up that I don't know about with her, but I definitely ugly cried when I met her.
Oh my god. So Schlong, we've gotten through Elevation and Unleavened Dark. We need to know, pal, what are your Ribbed for Her Pleasure matches of the week? One from Elevation, I think you kind of gave it to us, but one from Elevation, one from Dark. What would you say are your top picks?
I mean, they're both the Jungle Boy matches. I don't think that you could go anywhere else. He put on two great matches against two different opponents, two great opponents. But I think if anyone comes out of Double or Nothing wondering what you get from Jungle Boy, the two Darks really do show you that he can go and have a lot of fun, even with guys he doesn't have a story with. I think that's going to, I think if you, it's important to watch if you care, if you're wondering what he's got to bring to the table.
Well, I'm with you. I think that the Jungle Boy matches are definitely highlights. If I had to pick two, I think it would be from Elevation. The Jungle Boy match would be mine. And then from Dark, honestly, I really like that six-man tag, or that kind of trios match they put together. I thought it was really good. Not taking anything away from Jungle Boy and Bear Bronson, because that was a fantastic match too. But man, I really enjoyed. I really am a sucker for watching the Dark Order work together. Like those guys, it would be interesting to see. Like, okay, have five Stu Grayson and Alex Reynolds work together, and in what capacity have they in AEW kind of work together? Because it looks like they work together all the time in that, you know, in that match. It's just great. So those would be my picks. Kate, I don't know if you wanted to give a couple, you know, your picks, one from Elevation, one from Dark.
No, I would agree actually that I think it really is both of the Jungle Boy matches, but I will give an honorable mention to Tay Conti versus, they were saying D'Ambrosio.
Yep.
Just for how infectious she was, and just like she does some really cool shit in the ring. I love it. So I would throw that as an honorable mention. I also just want to say thanks to everybody who's in the Facebook chat. I'm trying to keep up with you, but we have some interactivity tonight. So that's always fun, trying to stay in touch with your responses. And we are going to cover the things that you're asking about, including Serena Deeb crushing it on the pre-show. But for now, we'll say goodbye to what was like a good amount of the schlong, like a medium long schlong.
It was a good amount, but it was just the tip. So, Ryan, it's always a pleasure having you here. And
thanks for having me.
No problem. We will talk to you again next week. But this has been just a tip of the schlong.
We hope you feel fulfilled after receiving a little tip of the schlong.
And with that, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to go in deep on the pay-per-view, Double or Nothing. So just give us 1 minute. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the pay-per-view after these words from the other shows on the Shining Wizards Network.
Everyone knows a lot of things can change in the span of 10 years. But when it comes to professional wrestling podcasting, one thing is still guaranteed. The Shining Wizards is the only place to get all the latest wrestling news, interviews with the greatest guests, and of course, tons of laughs in discussing the world of wrestling. The show is still available on Monday nights at 7 p.m. East on rantemradio.com and Rant Entertainment Media on the TuneIn app, and it's still available on all podcasting platforms. To check us out, head over to shiningwizards.com, where it's still wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Because of the obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens, and because of the crisis which is even now developing, this radio station will remain on the air day and night. This station and hundreds of other radio and TV stations throughout this part of the country are pooling their resources through an emergency network hookup to keep you informed of all developments.
Horns up, everyone. When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure every Friday to check out Radioactive Metal. Radioactive Metal is one of the longest-running podcasts on the interweb, and every week we bring you a fist full of metal, including interviews with all your favorite artists, discuss all the metal news, and feature the best tunes on the air today. So grab a Lemmy, join your cool Uncle Snowy, and co-host Aaron in the pit.
Your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. Join the impact player Phil Rea and the Portuguese man of war Choppy for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live every week on rantemradio.com. Get all our episodes over at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, and TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com.
Are you tired of being told what to think and believe by Hollywood elites and politicians who just don't care about you?
Tired of not getting the truth when you watch the news?
Tired of trying to figure out what pronoun to use?
Tired of mob mentality when all you want to do is think for yourself and make up your own mind?
That's where we come in. This is Justin.
And Vince.
Your hosts of Inconclusive Breakdown.
We are a weekly anti-PC podcast bringing you entertainment and current event news without any spin.
If you want to truly stay informed on what's going on in the world, then give us a listen every Sunday, anywhere you get podcasts, at least till Zuckerberg and Twitter Jack deplatform us.
And as always, we're proud members of the Shining Wizards Network.
Tired of the PC police telling you what you can and cannot say? Want a show that travels back to the 80s and 90s, where the badass hosts have beaten down cancel culture on three separate occasions and carried on to gloat about it? Since 2013, The Midnight Journey is that show. Travel back to the malls and arcades, pop in your VHS, and join us where the 80s and 90s return from the dead. Conan, tell them where to find us.
WLWstudios.com, home of the Midnight Jury podcast, hosted by Midnight Mike and Calvin Brody.
Also available on all major podcast platforms via the Shining Wizards Network, and join in the conversation on Twitter at Midnight Jury.
What's up, wrestling fans? You want something awesome? Check out Wrestling Night in Canada here on the Shining Wizards Network. We're three Canadian metalheads uniting for the love of pro wrestling. Every episode we go over all the latest news and special events with the odd unique interview as well. So grab a cold one and check out Wrestling Night in Canada, eh?
All right, we are back.
Hey, so, Joe in the Facebook chat said that Ryan Schlong needs a Bluetooth sponsorship, and I couldn't agree more. I'm not saying that Ryan Schlong needs Bluetooth. That is a personal thing. That's an internal discussion that he would have with himself. But the sponsorship, very much on board for.
Well, you know, I would certainly take a Bluetooth sponsorship. You know, every man might need a little extra, you know what I'm saying, Kate? You might need a little extra sometimes. You got to put one in the chamber just in case.
One in the chamber.
Yeah. You got to have one locked and loaded. You know, thanks to everybody in the Facebook, chat, watching along with me and Kate. Good to see you. I only have one screen, so I can't have the Facebook chat up, or else I'd be kind of watching along. But thanks for joining us. It's probably the coolest way to interact with us since it's live. Yeah, Kate, you got something.
We could do watch along with the Schlong sometime.
Oh, my God. Don't. You're going to kick yourself out of this group. We're just going to be like, Schlong, you're in. Kate's out.
Oh, if Kevin has lasted this long on Monday nights. Oh. I know Matt has a lot more tolerance. We'll see.
Well, don't push your luck. but let's get into the main event here, because we still have a lot of stuff to talk about beyond the pay-per-view. There's a lot kind of that happened over the past week that we want to talk about. But let's get into the pay-per-view. So Sunday night, Double or Nothing. We've already kind of spoiled some of what we were talking about because we were talking about Dark, but it's okay. We're going to talk about it and give our takes on it. Kate and I actually were sitting watching this show together, so we kind of already talked about some of this stuff. But it was a 7:30 start. On the pre-show, and the show actually went to midnight, so it was a pretty long show, but good thing we had off Monday. So let's kick it off with the pre-show match, where we had Riho versus Serena Deeb for the NWA Women's Championship. Listen, this came as, I think, like a late announcement that they were going to do this match, and as soon as they announced it, I was like, fuck yes. Like, and listen, I'm not a huge Riho fan. I think I've been very clear about that. I'm not really into the Japanese women's wrestlers. To be honest, I'm not even into a lot of the men's Japanese wrestlers. Like, I just, That style. Oh my goodness.
I was channeling Matthew.
I know. No, the style for me isn't always, you know, doesn't always work for me. But when they announced this match, I was really hopeful because I'm a fan of what Serena Deeb does in the ring, and she's just really smart about how she has her matches and the stories that get told during her matches. And lately, Kate, we know what we've been seeing, especially since last week she made her return, is she's starting to flip a little heel here. She's working pretty heelish at certain moments in the ring, and especially just kind of, I'll cut to the end and then we can go back through and you can kind of pick apart the match a little bit if you'd like, Kate. But Serena Deeb does win by submission with the Serenity Lock to retain her title. I don't think anybody thought Riho was taking the NWA title off her, but she does the same move where she slams her opponent's knee into the mat over and over and over again, and then she locks in the Serenity Lock to get the win. So it's a total heel move, and I like it because I think part of what we said, and we talked about this last week, so we sound like a broken record, but part of what we were saying was we like Serena Deeb, but we're really not seeing a lot of character out of her. And this adds in a ton of character. So listen, I thought this match was great. I thought actually Riho had a really nice match, but it went the way it was going to go. We weren't going to see a title change here tonight. So Kate, what did you think of the pre-show match?
Sure. So first of all, I enjoyed some Sour Patch Watermelons while watching this match, and I would recommend that everybody do the same. Mine were provided for me, which made them all the tastier, but always grab a snack for your pre-show match. I loved this match. I love Serena Deeb. I never had put together, I don't think until Matt had even told me, that Serena was the same Serena from the Straight Edge Society until like she came back to the AEW when she first signed with AEW. But yeah, I love seeing this heel character out of her. I think it's super important that she has a clear and defined character. And I think a lot of the reason we didn't when she first got here was this whole division was lost, right? So having her as a face that wasn't a super face either just made it really easy for her to kind of work with everyone, which is something they desperately needed when she first showed up. So found our way a little bit. She's working heel. Not to mention, she also has to work the same across a different TV promotions programming, right? So they have to match up. So Thunder Rosa is the monster face. You now have Serena as the monster heel. I don't think we thought the title was changing, but this was a great match. And if the purpose of the buy-in is to make you want to watch more, this does that for me. Serena's a really engaging wrestler and character, a fantastic in-ring storyteller. I agree with you on her finisher. It's fantastic. And I believe Riho is officially going back to Japan. She was having mental health issues in the States. I can't even imagine. She was here for like the most tumultuous election ever, and then there was a pandemic, and she's in a country that is an English-speaking country, so I know she was having issues. I think she's officially like moving back to Japan, so I don't know if this was a send-off match or if she's going to kind of transition in and out, but I thought she worked well in this match. I think we always come back to kind of more the same thing, that she's just got to be like 90 pounds soaking wet, so it's kind of hard to buy in sometimes that she can beat opponents unless they're also her size, which seems to be a commonality on the Joshi side. But it's not like her technical ability, it's more just like literally a size thing. So I thought this was a great match, and Serena is such a great pickup for them, and I really think she could be like what Sarah Del Rey was to NXT women's division. I really think she could be that transformative, and we're already starting to see that. If Tay Conti was her first like test project, she passed with flying colors because she's grown so much in the time that she's been here. So I'm very excited to see Serena in the Serena Deeb in the ring anytime.
So the other thing I actually, you know, wanted to say about this match was the fact that I almost think it was I don't want to say a gamble, because and that's definitely not a pun, but it was almost like a gamble, because when you think about it, you're putting a women's match on in your buy-in, right? So you're saying the women are going to be good enough to hook people who might be watching for free to order the show. And I think there's still a stigma with women's wrestling. Like, it's not entertaining. This is a match where I'm going to go get some popcorn and I'm not going to waste my time. Right. And they put it in the buy-in, which I think speaks strongly to the skill level they see in Serena and even Riho to be able to kind of hook you in to watch a full show just based off of this women's match. So I think that's pretty awesome. Right. Like, because
second one too. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
This is Serena. Can't buy a match because she had that match with Allison Kay on the last one too, so they have a lot of faith in her that she's going to be someone that draws people in enough to buy the pay-per-view. And I think we've also grown to understand that the buy-in match isn't like a write-off pre-show match. Tony Khan has made it very clear that that is right. A spot that he values. And when they did it with the women the first time, there was a lot of uproar, and he said, hey, I put MJF and Jungle Boy in the buy-in in a previous year. It's not a throwaway. I'm trying to get people to buy my pay-per-view. So he puts a lot of stock in it. He puts a lot of stock in Serena to deliver in that spot, clearly. And I get it. She's awesome.
Yeah, totally. So that was our pre-show match. And then we basically just get into the main card. And the first match in the pay-per-view was Hangman Adam Page versus Brian Cage. I do want to say right off the bat, I did not like the gimmick outfit that Brian Cage came in. I just really wish they would have just let him come in as himself instead of wearing this, you know, dollar store Terminator kind of Halloween costume that he came in. You know, he doesn't need all that shit. He's a giant. He's a mammoth of a man. I just want to say that off the bat, Kate. How did you feel about it?
I couldn't agree more. So there's a couple things going on here. First of all, it looked terrible. It looks like they took the cardboard that Jericho fell on from when he fell off the cage, and they were like, quick, make this into half an armored outfit that goes over Brian Cage. So it looked terrible. And like you said, look at Brian Cage's fucking physique. He doesn't need anything covering it. And on top of that, Hangman has the coolest gear in the whole wide world. So you have this lame outfit, and then you have the coolest gear with wrestling cowboy boots, which are the coolest thing I've ever seen. And we saw more pairs of them during Stadium Stampede. We all know how important fashion is. Look at the Young Bucks. You got a dangly. Like, it's really, really important. So I just felt like it's tough when you don't, like, he's mostly like a trunks and look at my enormous upper body guy. So I know people want to do special things for pay-per-views as far as their gear goes, but this was not it. I thought it was bad looking gear, and it's just made worse when Hangman is the coolest looking dude in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Hangman doesn't really have to try too hard. The cowboy gimmick really works for him. So they come out really strong. Hangman comes out, you know, with some really strong offense, some really cool moves and sequences during this match. Hangman hits a moonsault at one point. There's a powerbomb. Cage powerbombs Hangman into the ring post on the outside, you know, so some of those power spots by Cage. Yep.
That I think Bobby Lashley does too, where you basically do pull-ups with your opponent's body, which is like the coolest looking shit in the world.
Yes, he did do that. We also had an Avalanche Frankensteiner. We saw Adam Page throw the Avalanche Frankensteiner. So there was a lot of stuff kind of coming up. At one point, Brian Cage, sorry, the Cages and the Pages. I keep getting confused in my brain.
And you said a battle of the ages, which is a pun and a great one, and I congratulate you. And I also take credit that my pun influence is permeating throughout the podcast.
Terrible. So at one point, Brian Cage attempts the buckshot lariat, doesn't go his way. We actually see Hangman throw the F5 onto Brian Cage at one point, which is pretty incredible. So at one point, you know, Ricky Starks and Hook come down to the ring. Hook is you know, distracting the referee, and Starks comes in to with the FTW championship, but Cage doesn't take it for the easy win. He kind of tosses it back outside the ring, and Adam Page is able to hit the buckshot lariat. He gets the pinfall, and post match we do see Starks and Hook confront Brian Cage in the ring, but he just kind of pushes Cage, that is, pushes them away, and he leaves by himself. So we're continuing to see this dissension in Team Taz. We've seen the writing on the walls for the past few weeks. I think this is seriously just a product of Ricky Stark's neck being injured, where we can't really have this blow off happen just yet. So they're slow burning it. But I thought this was another strong show openers from AEW, whether it's during Dynamite, or pay-per-views. They just seem to know how to open a card. And I thought this was the perfect match to open the night.
So you mentioned Ricky Starks too, and he had the Aladdin fashion that only he could pull off. And it also reminded me that Brian Cage has the worst period, facial period, hair period ever period. The what is this thing? No, it's terrible. As far as the match goes, I thought this was one of the better matches we've seen from Brian Cage. Very different than he's had like against a Seidel too. I feel like I'm starting to see Cage kind of grow into his own. I think it still is a little bit opponent dependent, but I think Adam Page was a great opponent from him, and this is the pace he should work all the time. I felt like this was really, really strong. I think he got to show off all of his strengths. Hangman showed off all of his strengths, and a lot of their weaknesses got camouflaged, especially on Cage's side in this. None of it was really sloppy, because it was like fast pace was all of Hangman's offense and the slower pace stuff was all of Cage's offense. I really liked this. And aside from the blown buckshot lariat, which is a bummer because I love it when heels do that. It's like my favorite thing in wrestling when heels take other people's moves. I thought this was great. And to your point, they know how to open a card. I did not expect this to go on first. It did. I really liked it. I thought the energy was fun. And again, that live crowd being there was awesome. Awesome, 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 awesome from jump. And I probably should have thought about the fact that it isn't a title match and it's Adam Page who's over as shit. So, oh, yeah. Of course, I'm open with this, but this was really, really fun. I loved this match.
Fun opener. And we go straight into our second match, which winds up being the AEW World Tag Team Championship match. So we have Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley entering to the Wild Thing. And then the Young Bucks come out and do their entrance, high fashion, Kate. They have their pants that are labeled, you know, pocket. There's a label for pocket. They have it labeled champs. They have it labeled, you know, whatever else is on their pants they've got labeled. I think that happened all the way down their outfit, even to their shoes. I think it said something like, you know, sneaker or super kick, right? Something weird like that. But in the middle of the Young Bucks entrance, Moxley and Kingston interrupt and provide a little bit of a beatdown. A lot of what we would expect to see in this match, you know, with the Bucks and then, you know, Kenny and Eddie. Now, again, worth mentioning that Eddie Kingston is finally getting his time in front of a full house AEW crowd. And boy, again, one of those situations where it's like, well, we know we like him and we know he seems like the small crowd likes him, but boy, he is over as shit with this live crowd that was there on Sunday. So it was great to see that reaction. As we kind of get through the match, there are a couple moments where, you know, we see the cold spray get introduced. We see Cutler is kind of hanging out ringside, you know, kind of getting involved a little bit. Eventually, as we kind of get to the end of this match, it's just too much to overcome for Eddie and Jon Moxley. And the Young Bucks do win by pinfall with four. Yes, that's right. Four BTE triggers on Jon Moxley to retain their world championships. So Kate, this is another one. We're not going over our picks just because Matt's got him probably looking for his smile with him. I don't remember how we picked this, but again, I don't know if we necessarily saw this going one way or the other. Like, I think if we all picked Moxley and Eddie, like, it was like, well, it doesn't necessarily have to go that way. So it was kind of, we were maybe still in the air, but on the same page. But I was okay with the outcome here because I just don't know where the Bucks go after this without the titles. I think they're eventually going to lose those titles and have something to do. But for Sunday night, this kind of made sense. And it was a great match.
So I think we all ended up going with the Bucks. I think there were two schools of thought and either one could have worked. I think you thought that you could have Kingston and Mox be kind of a transitional champion to someone else, especially with the kind of rascally gimmick they're doing. You had said that there's some guys, or maybe it was he who shall not be named. Somebody had said, there's some guys that I just don't care if they lose, and Eddie Kingston's one of them, where it's just like, it doesn't really matter a ton if he loses. Like, there's nothing that he can't make feel important. So him losing doesn't make him feel buried in any way. This was my match for the night. I loved this match. I know I'm an Eddie mark. I know I'm a Moxley mark. I know I really like the Young Bucks. This match still blew me out of the water. The only thing is, I don't know, maybe Mox and Kingston couldn't overcome what was going on because there was no fucking point in having a referee the entire fucking match. We talk about it with Knox constantly. And this is one of the most egregious examples I've ever seen of it, when it was just both of the Bucks in there with Mox for, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It wasn't 10 seconds. It wasn't even a minute. It wasn't even 2 minutes. It was like a good 5 minutes. It just really, really, really fucks stuff up because I don't understand the point in having a referee if they're not going to do anything. And I understand latitude, but holy shit, it's distracting because I'm assuming there's rules in place until you tell me there's not. I'm assuming there's disqualifications until you tell me there's no disqualifications or it's a street fight. The reasons you have stipulations are because we assume there are rules to start with. And it is so annoying. And he's by far the worst at it. So that just really, like, in such a great match, was so unnecessary because everyone involved is such a professional and such a great storyteller. It's so unnecessary to have such bad refereeing here. Nobody needed that much latitude. It's stupid. So that was really disappointing. But the match itself really... I had high expectations and it still completely blew me out of the water. I would buy the pants that the Jacksons were wearing and just wear them around. I think it's awesome to have pockets that are labeled pockets and pants that are labeled pants. That's just fun. So great fashion. I feel like we should talk about the fashion pretty much in every match. Eddie with the gloves. Oh my God. I loved that. And just to your point about Eddie Kingston getting that popped, because Sean Ross Sapp and I are best friends, I was listening to him. I was wanted to hear about the Federation releases today. So I was watching his YouTube, and one of the questions that came up was like, describe their entrance in one word. And he said deserved. And I just loved that. He was like, Eddie Kingston deserved to have that reaction even just once in his career, like this 18-19 year career, to have a pop like that in front of a crowd is just so awesome. And I'm so happy because I think he's just so valuable to not only AEW, but this entire industry. So I'm with you on all fronts. I really, 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 really think they need to get some consistency on the refereeing, though. It takes me out of it.
You know, they must listen to this show because on BTE this week, actually, the final segment was the Bucks at what I think is the airport. And they kind of pull to the side by like a windows. And they said, you know, like Matt or Nick, one of them's like, all right, this is the spot, be cool. And they take like a wad of cash and put it on the windowsill. And they're zoomed in on it, and all of a sudden you see a hand come in and take it, and they zoom out, and it's Rick Knox. And he's like, so same time next week, guys, or whatever, like, you know, is implying that he was paid off. So who knows? Who knows if they're, if, you know, they're just kind of placating to what everybody's saying, or at least we're saying, how like it's just crazy. It would be interesting to see if that's a storyline they would be willing to, you know, kind of work into things, which, you know, we've seen kind of the heel or the bot referee storyline played out in other promotions, and, you know, it sometimes has mixed reactions, but it would be interesting to see if that somehow plays in or if it's just a joke. I personally think it's just a joke, but I was thinking about, as I sat with it, I was just like, you know, I wonder if they'd actually entertain playing around with that story. Either way, I am with you, Kate. I've said it time and time again. I'm not going to beat a dead horse. That pulls me out so much. And it was the same thing. It's like, listen, discretion is discretion, but it can't be blatant. Like, this is now, you know, like a, what do they call it? Like a Texas Tornado tag match, or the Lucha Libre tag rules, where you could just jump in and out of the ring. But I'm with you. It was probably my match of the night too. And I would say, I posed it at the time we were sitting and watching, was this as good or better than the Bucks versus Kenny and Hangman? And I think we all kind of were like, no, but it was still excellent. So if you haven't seen this pay-per-view, I would definitely say go out of your way to find this match. It was just another great showing from the Bucks and whoever they're going to put in the ring with them, which in this case happened to be two phenomenal solo wrestlers who work really well as a tag team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think my answer to your question about that, was it better? I said, no, I don't think it was better, but I think it, you couldn't have gotten a better situation out of these four wrestlers with the circumstances that they were in. I thought that was an absolutely, absolutely phenomenal match. And the fact that we're even talking about it being in that same realm is a good sign.
For sure. Absolutely. All right. So our third match of the night is the Double or Nothing Battle Royal. So we're not going to go through this like elimination by elimination, right? But we'll at least cover the main points. The first group out is the Club's group, and they started the match. It was Christian Cage, Matt Sydal, Powerhouse Hobbs, Dustin Rhodes, and Max Caster. So we do have a bunch of people in the ring who have issues with one another. Christian Cage and Powerhouse Hobbs, Dustin Rhodes, I think, had something going on with Max Caster maybe at one point. Either way, there's a lot going on in this first group. The average kind of stuff, is really happening. And I believe in that first group, Matt Sydal gets eliminated by Max Caster. And then Christian eliminates Max Caster. So the countdown continues. We get to our second set of entrants. It's the Diamonds. And that group is Matt Hardy, Isaiah Kennedy, Preston Vance, Nick Camarado, and Serpentico. So again, we kind of get Nick Camarado is now coming in. He's got issue with Dustin Rhodes. So there's still issues going on in the ring. Serpentico gets tossed, I think, pretty early on in this grouping. We even see Preston Vance powerbomb Isaiah Cassidy during his entrance. So there's a little kind of stuff going on there too. At one point here, we do get Camarado and Rhodes, getting into it with one another. And then they both get eliminated. And what happens is Nick Camarado basically blasts Dustin Rhodes in the face with the cowbell that's on the bull rope before, you know, he leaves ringside. I'm sorry. It was actually, my notes are so weird here, but Dustin eliminates Camarado. Dustin gets blasted with the cowbell, and then Hobbs tosses Dustin Rhodes. So this continues the issue with Camarado and Dustin Rhodes. Our third suit gets introduced. That's the Hearts. That consists of Brian Pillman Jr., Griff Garrison, Colt Cabana, Kate's Boo, Anthony Bowens, and Penta El Cerro. Penta comes out really hot. A bunch of stuff kind of going on in the ring. Bowens eventually gets out to the floor. You know, Colt gets eliminated by Isaiah Cassidy. You know, Penta is being attacked by the Hardy family, blah, blah, blah. Timer ticks down. We get to the fourth and final suit, which is the Spade Group. And that consists of Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, Mark Quinn, Aaron Solo, Evil Uno, and Lee Johnson. So we have a whole bunch of stuff going on in the ring. And then we have our 21st entrant, and it's our Joker. And the surprise entrance, Kate, this one actually popped us because we didn't see this coming. And you could talk about it because you saw this. You actually predicted this prior in another match. But our special entrant, the Joker, is Leo Rush. And I don't really think any of us thought about this. We were thinking other directions. But Leo Rush actually was pretty cool to have as a special entrant in this match. Let's pause there and just get, you know, what did you think of Leo Rush being the surprise? And I thought he got a pretty good pop from the crowd.
So I really liked it. I did predict this for the last pay-per-view. I don't know why I didn't think this pay-per-view. I think I predicted it might be Leo Rush until they said the thing about it being like a Hall of Fame caliber career or something. But I was like, maybe Leo Rush. I threw his name in, I think, a couple of times. I don't know why I didn't think of it for this pay-per-view. But yeah, he's phenomenally skilled in the ring. I think because his trajectory has been a little odd. He was great in WWE, then he got relegated to the like Lashley hype man thing. And then he resented wrestling, and then he was everywhere in wrestling, right? So he's kind of not had like a steady home to exhibit what he can do, but he's been in New Japan and had great matches there, and MLW and had great matches there. So I know Matt isn't like his biggest fan. I think just because we haven't had a chance for us to like sink our teeth into something consistent. But he's great in the ring. So I thought he was a great pick here. It does certainly sound like he signed there. He had said something about having conversations with Mark Henry, which we will also get to later. But I think he was not only the right guy, but like the right level guy, where it's someone who is going to add a lot of value to your company. But we can't keep having these expectations that it's going to be a Christian Cage every time, right? Like, it could have been someone who's already signed. A lot of people thought it was going to be the Big Show. I thought maybe it was going to be Frankie Kazarian. We didn't even talk about that in the tag match.
Wait a minute. I also need to ask, who's the Big Show? No more BS.
I'm sorry. Paul White.
Thank you.
Well, Paul White. I'll still do the well, but Paul White. I thought it was going to be Frankie Kazarian. We didn't talk about him with this new like elite killer gimmick. The Good Brothers tried to interfere in the tag match on behalf of the Jack. And he came out in like a black hoodie and kicked their ass. And that was that. But I think a cool development for where he might go. But yeah, so I thought Rush was a great guy to have in that spot. Definitely popped me, but like, we can't keep thinking like, and I'm the biggest CM Punk mark in the world, but like, it's not always going to be like a CM Punk level guy. Very well could have been like, you could throw a Scorpio Sky in because he wanted a title shot. Cabana was my dark horse for the winner, which I guess we can get to the end of the match shortly, because I thought he was someone that could absorb a loss, but still give Omega a great match. But yeah, as far as like the surprise entrant goes, I thought Leo Rush was a great choice, and I would like to see what he can do when he's in like storylines that are being properly built and calling one place home, kind of.
Yeah, I think he's still technically signed with MLW and maybe even has something. I thought I read somewhere or somebody maybe in the Discord said he's still got ties to New Japan. So he's maybe working some of these appearance deals, you know, where it's like he has this open contract. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. What was a little surprising is that while he came out and really threw some really pretty crazy moves, you know, hits a crossbody, hits a poison Frankensteiner, a standing Spanish fly, like really kind of showing his offense. And then he gets dumped pretty quick. So he doesn't get a whole lot of time. It was actually pretty quick. But it'll be interesting to see because he was getting into it with Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn, and Matt Hardy dumped Lio Rush. So maybe we're going to get a little bit of some, you know, sort of private party Lio Rush kind of issue that we've got going on. So we'll see what happens there. But eventually, with the rest of everything going on in the ring, Private Party does get eliminated. And we do get Christian and Matt Hardy in kind of their stare down because they've got issues with each other. And then they kind of, you know, are in the ring, Christian and Matt Hardy staring each other down, and they kind of look like they're going to work together to eliminate Jungle Boy Jack Perry. But Christian dumps Matt Hardy out. So now we're basically left with the last two, Christian Cage and Jack Perry, staring each other down. And when we basically get to the end here, after a whole bunch of action in the ring on the apron, is Jack Perry claims the win. He eliminates Christian Cage, and he is your new number one contender to the AEW World Championship. Post-match, kind of antics, not too many antics, but Christian is in Jungle Boy's face, you know, and he tells him he better go win the title, and then gives Jungle Boy a hug. And basically, Jurassic Express is now celebrating in the ring. Yes, even Marco Stunt is celebrating in the ring. So, listen, I think it's another one of these moments, Kate, where we all, I think, had been like, it's going to be Christian, no doubt about it. Christian is the way to go. He's the name. That's the only thing they have, you know, kind of in their pocket. I was shocked, literally shocked, when Jungle Boy won, but I'm totally fine with it. Like, he's awesome, and I think the match that he's going to have with Kenny Omega will be great, but he's not going to win the title.
Yeah, so the match overall, I felt like there were some missed opportunities and some spots were a little wonky. I agree with you that Rush kind of was in and out pretty quick. I think you could have at least had him last a little bit longer. There was no spot where like Hobbs was clearing everybody out at any point. Like, I wasn't like in love with some of the stuff that happened in this match. That being said, I predicted Christian. All three of us did. When he came out first, I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to go bell to bell, just like Edge did in the Rumble. Like, this is going to be great. I could not believe that it was Jungle Boy. And I loved that it surprised me because I think Christian would have also lost to Omega. So what's the point? Kind of. Like, why do that to Cage even? So make it an awesome moment for Jungle Boy, right? And they did. And I know, man, he's Marco's son. I love Marco. That was a very real moment. They are for real life best friends. That hug was like a very real thing. I think a lot of people are behind him. And look, you're having Omega face. He's facing Orange Cassidy later in this night, right? And then he's going to go face Jungle Boy. Like, he's going to go face a bunch of he's going to, as a heel, go face a bunch of faces that people really, really love. Like, how do you not love Jungle Boy? How do you not, other than like being smarky, love Orange Cassidy, right? So mm-hmm. having him go beat up on these guys, I think, is a really good way to burn us some time until we get to what I think is the eventual payoff of Hangman Adam Page finally beating him whenever that happens. But we've got time before that happens. That's going to happen at a pay-per-view. So I really like this decision. I like when I'm caught off guard in a good way, not in a what the fuck are you doing way. I'm fully with this. I liked it.
Yeah, it was actually pretty well done. And I'm super excited to see what's going to happen with Hangman Adam Page and Jungle Boy. I think we know the outcome, but that's going to happen in 2 weeks, I believe. It's not this coming Friday, but 2 weeks we'll get that match. So stay tuned for that. Our next match, we get Anthony Ogogo versus the American Dream, Cody Rhodes. And Cody Rhodes coming out looking like Homelander, the All-American. Prior to this match, you know, they did a spot where they're talking about, giving pets to vets who need the help, you know, a memorial. I think they even had something for Memorial Day that they flashed up. Super American, super patriotic right before this match to really make Cody the ultimate baby face. And Agogo obviously is the heel here. As much as people are like, he's not the heel. No, he's the heel, clearly. But as we get through this match, you know, I thought it was actually a pretty good showing from Agogo. Listen, if you're going to put him in the ring, why not put him with probably the top trainer at the Nightmare Factory, who's been working with him. So make sure that he looks really good for his first true wrestling match in AEW. So, you know, kind of cutting to the end, QT Marshall gets involved a little bit. Arn Anderson goes after him. You know, there's a couple moments like that, but getting to the end of this match, Cody Rhodes actually hits the Kudo driver. I believe it's also the cop killer. He hits the Kudo driver, the vertebraker. Yeah. There's like 18 different names. but Cody hits it and wins by pinfall. And I think this is another one where we were all like, it's going to be Cody or it's going to be a go-go. Like they're building it up. Cody's going to pass this on. You know, it'll be great because a go-go will be the heel and he'll get all this heat for beating the American Dream. And they don't give that to us, Kate, but I don't necessarily, you know, obviously it's like, oh, it's Memorial Day and blah, blah, blah. Like we probably should have seen it, but I really didn't see it. Just leading into it, it seemed like they were going to let a go-go have it, but this is clearly not going to be it. They're going to have to settle this again.
So a few things. The first is I don't understand up until this point, this bullshit narrative about Cody inserts himself into everything and is here to put himself over. First thing he did was take himself out of the world title picture. When he was TNT champ, he put over like Sonny Kiss. He brought a bunch of indie guys in. Then he went away, and then he got Shaq on your television in a super interesting way, and now he has this. So I'm not fucking here for this, like, Cody's inserting himself into everything. Like, fuck off with that take. I don't get it. I think people are just whiny baby idiots. Now, right around the point where the dogs came out, I was like, I am dumb for not choosing Cody Rhodes to win this match. First match in front of a live crowd. He's probably the biggest star in the company. You're going to tell me he's not going to go over? That was dumb. Then it's Memorial Day weekend. I was like, I'm an idiot. And you know how you make a go-go an even bigger heel? You haven't beat the shit out of new dad Cody Rhodes and maybe slap Brandy at some point. Like, duh, of course this is going to continue fast. Like, I was like, why did I not see the handwriting on the wall for this? Beating up new dad Cody is going to be even more fuel for the fire. You have Cody win here, probably go 3 matches. Doesn't have to be on another pay-per-view, but I felt silly. This was, I think, actually my least favorite match of the night. Not because it was bad. This fucking juiced card. Like, really, really good card. And yeah. Agogo really well, but he's just, that was the first time he's wrestled in front of a live crowd ever. So I didn't like love this. There were some spots that were great. I think Agogo is an unbelievable like salesman. I thought he did a really good job selling considering it's something that he hasn't done before. I said that about people were very critical of the Rousey run. One thing that I was amazed by is the fact that she's physically trained in real life to get her ass really kicked as she could sell the shit out of stuff. Yeah. I felt the same about Agogo. Like, this is a guy who was an Olympic level boxer, got punched all the time for real and was selling not that. So I thought it was a really good match. The booking did initially, didn't like sit great with me, but I get it in the long run now. And even though this was my least favorite match of the night, I felt like it was almost a near perfect pay-per-view. So it's not to say it was a bad match. It just wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. I guess the reason I kind of thought a go-go was going to go over here was because what better way to really kind of elevate someone than spoiling the party, right?
Sure.
You know, give him just so much heat. as the heel. But, you know, I, again, it's like, didn't get the pick, you know, the other stuff didn't really factor into me. But I'm not, I don't hate it. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of fun not knowing who's going to win the match. Anyway, moving forward, because we still got a bunch of stuff to cover. Yes, Kate, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, we just can't skip past the fashion of the bowling shirt that QT Marshall was wearing as well. And Kevin in the Facebook chat said, he said, I don't care about the factory. There, I said it. I'm actually kind of with him, but I think it's just because I think Nick Camarado is going to be my favorite breakout star from there. But mostly QT Marshall's bowling shirt is something that we had to make note of before we moved on.
True, it's high fashion. Listen, it's a button-down shirt that you don't have to tuck in, and it's usually pretty roomy. So so it works for me. I actually don't own a bowling shirt. I have to get a Pin Pal shirt, and that'll be the only bowling shirt I can have. All right, moving on. Our next match was Lance Archer versus Miro for the AEW TNT Championship. Archer comes really strong out of the gate. Elbows, you know, knuckle locks. He walks the top rope, you know, does all the things you want to see Archer do. But Miro is actually able to battle back. Miro actually does win by pinfall on referee stoppage with the game over to retain the championship. So we didn't see a change here. I think, again, we'll talk about picks if Matt ever finds his smile and his way back to us.
Britt Baker.
That's true. Go to Britt Baker. I was okay again with this. Like, listen, Miro can hold this title and be just as good. If Lance were to win it, you know, I think that would also be fine. But I didn't think this was a terrible match. Like, we want to see, this is what we want to see Miro doing, you know, being a legitimate, you know, kind of badass in the ring. And he's able to do that. And Archer is a pretty big opponent to do that against. So I didn't think it was a terrible match. I think we got exactly, you know, the type of match that we were going to get. It was the outcome that maybe swerved us a little bit.
Swerved you guys. I did not think at any point Miro was going to drop his belt at all going into this. People were so excited to see him win it. There's no way he's dropping it that fast. He's going to have a good, healthy run with this thing. I think him facing Archer was to say, like, hey, look, I can do more than squash guys that are half my size. Throw me in there with a big dude. Huge Haas. I really, really liked this match a lot. I think it was a good exhibition of what both of them can do. And Archer looks like he's maybe turning the page on his character a little bit. I forget what his little phrase was, but it ends with rampage, which is interesting. It was like, it felt very Seth Rollins, redesign, rebuild, reclaim. It was like a lot of re-something, but he ended it with rampage. And I was like, maybe there is going to be another title on the old rampage and he's going to be their inaugural champ there. But I really liked this. My favorite part was when Miro threw the snake in the bag backstage.
That's right.
Joey Janela tweeted that he checked on the snake. The snake is fine, but I just loved that he couldn't even get the bag out and he threw it backstage. I thought that was really fun. And I don't think I've seen anybody do that. So that was a really great spot, but I really liked this match. They're two Haases that work really differently. So I thought it was cool because you still get like a collision of styles a little bit, but they're still two really big dudes. So I thought they had really good ring chemistry and I really liked this match a lot. And I beat you guys in the picks, so I'll take that one.
All right, clear Jets. So I agree. I like this match a lot. It went, you know, in retrospect, it went the way it should have gone. So there you go, Kate. I basically concede that to you. The next match we get is Britt Baker versus Shida for the AEW Women's World Championship. I'm going to cut to the finish here, Kate, because there's other stuff to unpack. This went the way we all were hoping it would go. And Britt Baker is able to win by submission with the lockjaw to obtain the Women's World Championship. And post-match walking back up the ramp, Tony Schiavone comes out from commentary to give Britt Baker, his best friend, a hug on the ramp. So a couple things here that I think I would like to address. I think the outcome of this match was absolutely what needed to happen. And I think that it was a good match. My only beef is that it seemed a little long because it seemed like they both kind of gassed out. And it's something that I've noticed from Britt Baker in the past, and it looks like it's still an issue, is she seems like she gasses out in these matches, and things slow down dramatically, especially when you're building a finish the way they were doing that with like a zillion false finishes. But of course, you know, I'm happy with the outcome. So, Kate, those were a couple of things that I wanted to bring up. Feel free to comment on any of those. I know we were kind of talking about the pacing and the stamina, but you know, what's your take on this match? And I know clearly I love the outcome, so I'm good with the outcome.
No, I'm with you on both of those points. They did get gas toward the end, and that when you're going to do a million near falls like that, you see it somewhat frequently because it's just very high energy and fast pace. When Britt does something like the Unsanctioned match, there's space there, right? And they didn't create a lot of space in this match. So sometimes you just need to slow down a little bit. That was like a huge thing with Nyla. When she slowed down, all of a sudden we saw someone who wasn't as sloppy and someone who was just taking their time. So I think it's just a victim of pacing. I thought it was a good match and it did get a little sloppy at the end. But to me, the outcome was like kind of the only thing that mattered. We'll talk about the racism that happened at the Spanish commentary desk toward the end, but you know, that was obviously something. And then on Friday, on the Dynamite before, Sheena had her first in-ring promo ever, and guess what, guys, her English is fucking good. It was fine. They could have had her cutting promos this entire reign and it pissed me the fuck off. So I'm glad we're turning a page on that, but it did really annoy me on Friday, actually, when I was like, she could have been cutting promos this whole time. This entire reign that was over a year long. It would have been way less if she actually spoke. Because the only fun thing she did was that mini feud with Abaddon, and that was hilarious.
Well, so. If you ask the Spanish announce team from Friday, they don't think her English is so good. But we will talk about it later in our news and notes. Let's talk about it later. But yeah, I think we're all excited to see where this is going to go now. We know Thunder Rosa has an issue here with Britt Baker. We know there's probably a few others who are going to want a shot at this. So nothing post-match happening besides the hug between Britt and Tony. So moving on, we get to just a kind of an insert thing as they show Pac, Orange Cassidy, and Kenny all in the back, and how they're prepping, kind of warming up for the match later in the night. Orange Cassidy is literally just sitting in a chair while everybody around him is doing something. Pac is, I believe, doing push-ups the whole time. And then Kenny is trying to shoot, you know, like one of those Nerf basketballs into a hoop. So three guys doing totally different things. Their match comes up later, but our next match on the card to discuss is Darby Allin and Sting versus Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. Kate, you know, again, we're getting kind of long here, so I'm just going to kind of cut to the finish, and then we'll kind of pick apart a few things in the match. So the end of this match went the way I believe we all thought it was going to go. Darby and Sting win by a pinfall. It's a Scorpion Death Drop from Sting on Scorpio Sky. The thing that I want to bring up here is the fact that I think going into this, we were like, it's going to be cool. Like, Sting is going to be so well protected. He's probably just going to stand on the apron and Darby will do all the work. And, you know, he'll get tagged in. He'll do like the Scorpion Deathlock, and he'll do, you know, maybe a splash in the corner, all the Sting stuff you'll see. Boy, we couldn't have been any more wrong. Because Sting gets suplexed on the stage. Sting also dives off the stage onto both Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. Like, what the fuck is going on? And then it kind of became what we would expect, right? Like, Sting on the apron, but tagging in and out often, you know, not not like he's just standing there for 20 minutes and then he comes in and gets the pin. I mean, he was in and out of this entire match. That's kind of the main thing I wanted to discuss. Was I was shocked at the level of kind of physicality we saw out of Sting.
Okay, so one thing that I have to correct you on is I think this went the way that none of us thought, because I think we all picked the heels.
Did we? Sorry.
I think this was one that could go either way. Like, it was very obvious that we could see. And this one, in retrospect, I was like, it's Sting's first time in the ring for 6 years.
Right.
I felt like if Sting lost, no one would give a shit. So it would probably go to the heels. But when he did that crossbody or whatever that was, I was stunned. This is the second time where I've thought, and maybe it's shame on me because they keep proving me wrong. Like, when they did it with Shaq, I was like, oh, Cody will do all the work and then Shaq will do a thing because he's huge and that'll be it. Shaq went through a fucking table, right?
Yep.
And now Sting was like, I couldn't believe he was going to step in the ring at all with the way his career ended. And he's out there to, like, off of the stage, like, not even in the ring. And we also can't forget to mention the spot where Ethan Page threw Darby Allin like 10 rows into the crowd, by the way. Bananas. So
crazy.
I was expecting this to be mostly like a Scorpio Sky Ethan Page showcase with like some crazy shit from Darby in there. It was not. It was like really even on all of their parts. I thought Ethan Page got made a star. Like, I thought if anybody shined in that match, obviously Sting was insane and completely outperformed any expectations that I think probably anyone really had. I didn't even like totally want to see him in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, while we were watching it, I think I even said, like, his style, the way he works, like, he can do some stuff in the ring. Like you said, the Scorpion and the Stinger Splash and stuff like that. But he was just, like, beyond what I expected. But I think people really understood who Ethan Page was by the end of that match. And I think that was really important. I think everyone's already in a Scorpio Sky. Darby, obviously, Sting, duh. For Ethan Page to have done not only that spot with Darby, but like to be standing as proud as he was in that match, I thought was really, really, really important. And I thought he got over huge. But yeah, I'm with you. I did not expect that from Sting, and I was absolutely, absolutely blown away.
Yeah, you know, you are right, Kate. I think we all did pick Ethan Page and Scorpio to win, but that's fine. Yeah, it was an incredibly well done match for a wrestler who hasn't been in the ring for 6 years, you know, and it's not a pre-tape match to do in front of a live crowd. I was blown away. I have to say, I guess I was wrong. Sting can still go and it's entertaining. So moving on after this, we got our championship triple threat match. So we thought that this was going to main event the night, but they clearly went out with the Inner Circle Stadium Stampede. We'll talk about that coming up. But again, let's kind of just cut to the end of this match. It went the way, I think most of us thought. I think maybe Matt picked the opposite here. I think Matt actually picked Orange Cassidy to win. And there were a few moments I was like, fuck, I'm going to have to tell Matt he was right, because it got super close. But Kenny Omega does win by pinfall with the crucifix pin on Orange Cassidy to retain his title. I think this was another, you know, kind of match, Kate, where if you're not in on Orange Cassidy, this should be one to come in on Orange Cassidy.
I don't get the people that aren't in on Orange Cassidy at this point. I don't know what else you want from him. Like, I've said this ad nauseum, and I don't care. I'm going to say it again, because this is like the same thing to me. Look at where Hugger Bailey was, and look at where Heel Bailey is now. Like, absolutely insane transformation. And I don't see why people don't understand that apathy could be a phenomenal heel device someday. And if you hear his podcast with Colt Cabana, by the way, you're going to understand exactly what I'm talking about, because he just, like, the way he shuts down Cabana at every turn of him trying to have a conversation with him is utterly hilarious. But like, he's great in the ring. And there were a couple of like kick spots that were with the right guy. I thought it was way funnier that they were with Pac. But he didn't wait for a heel to break his sunglasses. He took them off himself. Like, he can get serious as a heart attack when he needs to, because he's really good in the ring. Like, it's not a gimmick to hide that he's a bad wrestler. Like, I thought it was really, really well done. There was one near fall where I really did think he was going over. Pac was out of the ring and he went to cover Kenny, and I was like, oh my God, yeah. I'm gonna have to say that Matt Bowman was right about something, and that almost made me really sad. But also, Matt had some really good points about why Orange Cassidy could go over. It would drum up a ton of buzz, obviously. First live crowd back, that's going to be huge. It's the first time they've done a triple threat, so Kenny would be super protected in the law. So he had some good reasons. I think he was trying to get ahead on picks, if he was right and wrong. But I really thought this match was great. I thought Kenny going through all the belts he has to hit people, I know that's a little gimmicky. I know some people felt like that was a little too like WCWE. I really, really liked that. I thought that was fun. I also think that's another way for people to be more protected in a loss, is like, he used these 35 pound belts and hit me with a bunch of them. So I thought this match was great. I thought it didn't feel like it had a lot of the logical errors that a lot of triple threats can present, which I'm not a big triple threat gal in general, but this one I felt like was pretty well done. And I will never understand the hate for Orange Cassidy. I just don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of with you, Kate. I'm not a huge triple threat fan, but this one, honestly, at a lot of points was like, I don't know which way this is going to go. Right? Like, it could really be Orange Cassidy. You know, it might be Pac stealing it. And then it was like, well, it could be like, it kind of did exactly what it needed to do. Again, I wouldn't necessarily call it my match. I don't think I'd call that my match of the night, but it's worth it to check out. And especially like you said, if you're not into Orange Cassidy, you should make sure you see this match, because he can show you what he can do, and he's done it before, but this was really a good one for his showing.
I agree.
All right. So after this, we get Tony Schiavone in the ring, and he announces the debut of AEW Rampage, which would be Friday nights at 10 PM starting in August. But he also announced that AEW has signed an analyst and coach for Rampage, and wouldn't you know, it's goddamn Mark Henry. Out of left field, Mark Henry is now a part of All Elite Wrestling. They actually, this is probably a good spot for it, but they sent out a press release the other day, and they basically outlined everything the same way we were kind of led to believe it. He's going to be an expert analyst, coach, scout, and mentor within the company. You know, Kate, I think this one all took us by surprise, because we just didn't see anything like this coming. And then to have it be Mark Henry, you know, was just like, oh, okay. Like, this kind of makes total sense. Especially when you think about, like, Mark Henry was recruited when he was in the Olympics, so he kind of sees the flip side of it. Now he can maybe go out there and do the same thing. He can help recruit talent, especially because they've kind of been open and said that with this new hour, they're going to possibly look to expand their rosters. So they're going to need somebody to do that. And I think Mark Henry is super entertaining. He's still apparently going to hold his spot on Busted Open, so it's not going to interfere. You know, so it kind of makes sense to me, and I really like this, and I liked it when they announced it, and I like it now, and, you know, having sat with it for like, you know, 3 days, I think it's a great move.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, I was not a fan of the Big Show signing, Paul White signing, then Big Show into Paul White in this move. I still don't know if I am. He does an all right job at what he does, but I do think he is probably being somewhat underutilized. I love this with Mark Henry. He has a ton of experience on Busted Open. So I think as far as being an analyst goes, he's going to have so much value to add. I think he was criminally underrated in his time in WWE for the most part. And I just think he's going to be able to help so much, both backstage and on the screen. I think he's just going to be a fantastic addition, and especially for starting another hour of programming. I don't know if there's anybody out there that's a better call right now between his strength, his emotional appeal, I think is something that people completely missed. When he turned heel, when he did his fake retirement promo in WWE, like, he knows exactly what to do. He's also criminally underrated at things like how Britt Baker's amazing at finding the camera. He was really good at that in WWE. Okay. Yeah. So I really, really like this signing. I don't know if there could be a better situation, and hell yeah, he's still going to be Busted Open. I think that can only help Tony Khan. So
of course, kudos
to them. Maybe he'll be able to train Dave LaGreca even better for his next match with Thunder Rosa, whenever that is.
Let's hope. Yeah. I mean, especially when you say Mark Henry is going to be a coach, you know, again, it was something that I bought up when Paul White got signed, was like, listen, he's a big dude. He has to work a different style in the ring. Mark Henry is the same way. He's a big dude, not maybe as tall, but he is a large man who knows how you have to work with that type of physique in the ring. So I think having guys like Big Show and, you know, Mark Henry, if they're going to be in a coaching capacity, makes total sense, because you can work with the guys who are kind of hosses. You can work with Powerhouse Hobbs to kind of teach him. That's right. Marco Stunt too. How to be in the ring. Right. Huge. So that was our surprise of the night. And then we get into the main event. So the main event of the night was the Inner Circle versus the Pinnacle in the Stadium Stampede match. A couple things I want to call out here before we cut to the winner. The Inner Circle actually rappelled down. We thought they were going to be on a zip line, but they're actually always supposed to be rappelling into the stadium, Kate. So it wasn't like some sort of thing that got messed up and then they pivoted. They were apparently always going to rappel in. And it sounds like, according to, I think it was Jericho. Sorry, I was looking back through my notes. It said that the person they got to kind of coordinate this was one of the stunt coordinators from the John Wick franchise to basically help lay everything out. So they were not going to spare any expense. So they rappel in, and we get, you know, MJF basically is kind of panicking by their limo. And then, you know, the Pinnacle kind of comes in a different angle, and everybody starts to kind of unravel on each other. Some other fun things to note is, as Jericho was kind of working MJF over in the Jaguars facilities, at one point they get into the coach's room and Urban Meyer's in there watching tape or something. Was fun. Yeah. They did a spot in a club where Santana and Ortiz are in the club, and then there's some sort of drink off, which they just start beating up regular people, and then they get back to the Pinnacle, Dax and Cash, and they throw them in an elevator.
And who was the DJ?
The DJ was Conan. That's right. I forgot that K-Dog was DJing. So it was a pretty fun match. Eventually, as they're fighting kind of all over the place, the Inner Circle is actually able to get the win by pinfall. It is a 6:30 senton from Sammy Guevara on Sean Spears. So the Inner Circle will stay a thing. They are now all make their way into the main ring within Daly's place. They hug, they throw up the bird. The camera, you know, is right there as the pyro is going off. And that's the end of the night. So, again, Kate, this was one I think we were sort of swerved on. I think out of all of us, we kind of thought that, you know, the Pinnacle was going to come through because the Inner Circle was finally going to have run their course, but it didn't happen. And I'm okay with this. I just want to see where they're going to go with this now, because my one beef was, okay, your first issue was settled in Blood and Guts. Okay. So first issue is kind of settled in Blood and Guts, but now you have the Stadium Stampede for the return match. And now that the Inner Circle's won, what are you going to do for a rubber match? You've already set the bar so high, you know, with Stadium Stampede and Blood and Guts. Where do you go from here? So that was my only kind of beef with this whole kind of booking. Other than that, I didn't have any problems. I loved it. I think it looked great. I think that it definitely felt more planned out than the last one. Not to say that it wasn't planned out, but the last one was all pre-taped, so they could have done things over and over, and they edited stuff together and spliced it. It didn't seem like they had too much of that here, and maybe that's because they hit it better now that they had more time to kind of prepare, and they did it once already. But listen, it was a fun match. It was exactly what you want to see in a match like this. What did you think, Kate?
I really liked it. First, I like the payoff of the fact that Sammy was the one to get the pin. I like that he got on Spears. I loved the Urban Meyer spot. I thought that was so funny. I loved Sammy Guevara getting his golf cart revenge. I thought that was great. It wasn't as silly as the first one. I don't think it was intended to be. You know, not 100 yards of Northern Light suplexes or anything like that. But I thought it was great. I thought that they used the stadium in a completely different way than the first time, which I thought was kind of impressive, because they used like what I felt like was practically the whole stadium the first time. So
right.
I really liked this. I was surprised by the booking as well. Our weekly poll was almost split. I think it was literally like 51-39 Pinnacle to Inner Circle. So I think a lot of people thought, well, they'll lose and they'll disband because Jericho's going to go on a Fozzy tour. And then the other part thought, we'll have a blow off, right? So right. I don't know what the third style match is. I think you obviously have to do one. Maybe it's like a Survivor Series style match where the feuds get set up on a more personal level in some way. I guess we'll see what they have in store. They've earned my trust on stuff like this with their long-term storytelling. But to me, the biggest thing was that, you know, Sammy being the one to get the pin, I thought was definitely the right call.
Yep.
I thought really fun. I thought it was a good way to close the show. They didn't do as much live stuff as I thought they were going to do. So I think maybe closing out with the championship match would have actually made more sense. Cause they kind of just came into the ring. They had that right. spot where Jericho and MJF looked like they were going to throw each other over the balcony, which was terrifying. But,
yes.
Like other than that, I don't know if this needed to close the show, but I don't have a problem with it doing so. But Sammy getting the pin was the big thing for me. I'm very curious to see what the payoff is going to look like for the third inevitable match.
It will be interesting. And that closed our night out. So, you know, Kate and I basically said, you know, we our match of the night would pretty much be the Young Bucks and John Moxley and Eddie Kingston. If you had to wrap this up with like a letter grade, Kate, what would you put on it?
Man, probably an insanely strong B plus or an A minus. To me, the only pay-per-view that was better than this that we've seen was probably Revolution 2020, I think, was yep. just literal perfection from front to back. The only thing I felt like that was kind of down was the Battle Royal up until the ending that I loved, and Cody and Agogo still wasn't in love with it like I was everything else in the car, but I would probably go extremely strong B plus or A minus.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I would say B plus, but it could easily be A minus. It was an entertaining show. All the matches, you know, held their own. And it was exciting to kind of have picked, you know, our picks and still not really know which way it could go. And then even being like, you know what? I'm okay with that. Like, I actually can see where this is going and I like it. So it was definitely a strong pay-per-view. And you mentioned, you know, one of the pay-per-views in 2020. So it's probably a good time just to mention it, Kate. They did announce dates for the next few pay-per-views. All Out is going to be Sunday, September 5th. And it's going to be in Chicago. But I don't think they've announced the actual like building yet, but it will be in Chicago in on September 5th. So stay tuned for that. That's coming. But they also announced that Full Gear. Sorry, I was losing the type. I couldn't remember if it was Revolution or what, but Full Gear will run St. Louis on Saturday, November 6th, 2021. And the rumor is that they're going to run the Rampage there the night before on the Friday. So it'll be interesting to see that. Hey, Kate, maybe we go to St. Louis, right? It's in November. We got plenty of time to plan. Look,
buddy.
So those two pay-per-views, they did announce those kind of during the card. I just wanted to bring it up because you know, it seemed like a good time. And also we do have as we said before, we do have a Friday Night Dynamite this week, and they did release a card for the episode. It will be from 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. again on TNT on this Friday, June 4th. And the card will be the Young Bucks versus Pac and Penta. I don't believe that this is a championship match. I think it is just a match between the champions and non-champions. Dr. Britt Baker is going to have a championship celebration on Friday night. So what better way to celebrate than do it live on television like a heel? I think that's perfect. We're also going to get Christian Cage and Jungle Boy versus Private Party on Friday night. Nick Comoroto and Dustin Rhodes will have a bullwhip match. So that should be fun to see now that he's been carrying around that bullwhip. And we're going to get Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson with obviously Arn Anderson versus QT Marshall and Anthony Ogogo. We'll also hear from Mark Henry, the World's Strongest Man, now that he is All Elite. So we have that to look forward to Friday night after a pretty stellar pay-per-view. Moving on, Kate, we have a few things we wanted to at least bring up, but we did get a question earlier today in our Discord. And if you're listening and you're not in the Shining Wizards Discord, you should jump in. We throw up links to it every now and again. If you go to the Shining Wizards social media, they're linking it constantly. So get in, say hello. We're always in there chatting and pretty active. Milwaukee Tom did submit a question for us he wanted to bring up. Milwaukee Tom said, so other companies like to talk up that. Hold on. Other companies like to talk up. You know, and kind of mention the first Grand Slam / Triple Crown winner of the company. Milwaukee Tom was wondering who, in your opinion, will be the first Triple Crown or Grand Slam if these trios belts come out. And then he says, personally, he said he would, you know, probably say Hangman, but the sleeper could be Scorpio Sky. So any thoughts, Kate? Just, I know this is being thrust upon you kind of at the last minute, but if you can rack your brain, any ideas on like who you might be able to see as the first Triple Crown or Grand Slam winner of AEW?
Well, the trios thing is interesting because if it does include trios, I think it's almost a no-brainer. It's Hangman at this point. I think he's going to take the belt from Kenny, and he'd already have the tags at his belt. A trio belt would be really easy if he is aligned with the Dark Order, and then there's just the TNT title. So that makes it really interesting. It very well could be Omega, though. I think them having had that tag run makes it extremely possible that it could also be Omega. He obviously has this going on, but a TNT championship run doesn't seem like it would be that far off, especially for the belt collector. I think Paige is going to beat him. He's going to completely unravel and lose all of his belts. So maybe on his road to recovery from all of those belt losses, he gets that TNT title. So I'd probably say Omega, but if you're going to throw trios in there, I'd say Hangman with this Dark Order alignment. But then again, there's the Elite too, right? So maybe they're your first trios. I'd go Kenny, actually, now that I think about that. Kenny.
Yeah, I was kind of with you in thinking, and Tom, thinking that Hangman could be the guy. But I don't know, man. If I had to make one pick, I'd say Hangman, but I think that's your safe pick. Beyond that, I don't know if there's anybody else that I could see becoming like a Triple Crown winner or a Grand Slam champion in AEW right now. I think
the tag division is so stacked with true tag teams that the idea of an individual jumping in there seems tricky. So I definitely get that.
Yeah. So Tom, thanks for the question. I'm sorry if, you know, that maybe was just rambling that didn't answer your question, but you know, thanks for submitting it. Some other things to talk about, and I know I kind of left this off the agenda, Kate. It was not on purpose. I simply forgot, but at FanFest, they announced more figures coming from Jazzwares for AEW. You love figure talk. So they basically unveiled additional Unrivaled series, but they also, for the first time, were able to kind of share the Unmatched group. So there's a lot of series that are coming out this fall, some more Unrivaled, some more Unmatched. That's a separate line. And then they also announced that the Wrestling Buddies are being brought back. So they're going to do Darby Allin, Luchasaurus, which I'm going to have to buy for Baby A, Kenny Omega, and a Cody Rhodes. So they'll have the Wrestling Buddies.
14 years from now, when they give us a women's wrestling buddy, that'll be great. I can't wait for that. But well, I'm sure production will take long because you have to sew them. So that's going to be exhausting.
Well, Britt Baker is getting her figure. She's going to be part of the Unmatched series. And Ref Aubrey, which I think is pretty awesome and well-deserved. Ref Aubrey is getting her own figure. You'll have to buy the Ringside collectible exclusive AEW Double or Nothing authentic scale ring to get Ref Aubrey within it. But you know, it's still a pretty awesome to have a referee with their own official you know, action figure. So it's pretty awesome. I know I was following along with the Kate and this bores you, but I at least did want to bring it up.
No, it's important and relevant and cool, and I'll be Matt about it. How can I act like Matt and talk about it? Oh, great. So there's so many, I'm going to go fucking broke. You goons. I have to buy two sets. Come on. I pre-ordered my series 48s like 6 years ago and I'm still waiting on them. Ah, Matt.
Oh my goodness. But you're right. Me and Matt are going to be broke.
I will buy a wrestling buddy because I love wrestling buddies. I don't know which one, but the Darby Allin one is hilarious because I think to scale, it's like bigger than him.
Right. Yes.
It's like so filled out because it's just a wrestling buddy. It's not like they take everybody's like figure, not figure, like action right. figure, but their actual physical figures into account. So he's just all like beefy like a wrestler. Like, it probably weighs more than the cloth and stuffing weighs more than Darby.
Yeah, it looks really funny, but like I know a small child in my house saw Luchasaurus and was like, I need that. It's like, oh.
Yeah, he does.
So anyway, moving on. So there's a couple kind of items came up that were being asked of Tony Khan in his post Double or Nothing press conference. So he was asked about the live microphone during the Friday Dynamite broadcast for the Spanish announce team. So we kind of alluded to this before, but if you didn't hear about this, apparently the Spanish announce team's microphones were left on during a commercial break through Fight TV. what ensued was it was, I think, following Sheeta's promo, and somebody said, hey, do, you know, Sheeta, and the person took that the person took that as do a basically racist Japanese accent, and, you know, some people laughed, some people you know, kind of scolded him, but either way, the big news is Tony Khan was asked about Willie Urbina. He was the one who did the impressions, because AEW let him go like immediately. When asked about it, Tony Khan said, I didn't think there was any excuse. I was not happy. Afterwards, I heard there was a lot, afterwards, I heard what was said, and having our commentators involved with what was said about her, who I apologize to, I thought it as best for the company to make this decision. So no issues with TK letting Willie Urbina go. And I think that's the right move.
Yeah. I can't think of a possible context where what he did was justifiable. Sheeta acknowledged it like 2 days later and said something to the effect of, as far as what people say about my heritage, I don't give a shit. To which I immediately thought, why didn't they let her have a personality for her entire title reign? She's clearly got right. something there. But Justin, first of all, good job, because they're it's like Stop Asian Hate campaign awareness, whatever the fuck, all over the world and in AEW. So just killing it on that front. And just, I mean, just blatant racism. There's no other way to put it. There's right. no justifiable context for that. I think to move swiftly was smart. But yeah, just like an awful circumstance. So maybe Tom Phillips from WWE is learning Spanish somewhere and going to take over. But yeah, no. That was the only course of action to take, and I'm glad they took it quickly.
Well, I am glad too. TK was also asked about the Friday night promo that he cut on WWE president Nick Khan about the reported talks going on with New Japan. Tony went on to say, I talked to New Japan. I asked them if they thought it would be a good idea and a good promo, and they thought it was great and thought it would be a great promo. So it made sense. It was a big weekend for us, so it's true. We have a lot of stuff going on with New Japan, and everyone's welcome to talk to each other in the wrestling business. But we've done some great stuff with New Japan just in the last few weeks. And I think we're going to do a lot of great things going forward from everything we've talked about and agreed to. So I'm excited about it. So there were people who were giving TK heat for that promo he cut, but listen, I thought it was hilarious. Kind of being that wrestling heel that he sort of is with Impact Television. So I thought it was funny.
He had sunglasses on. Like, first of all, shows you how very serious those talks were with WWE if he called them up and was like, hey, should I do this? Right. And like, ELP is like, oh, have I been texting the wrong con? My bad. Wow, those serious talks must have been really, really serious. They must be basically putting pen to paper. If you're mad about the promo, you're a fucking dork. Relax. It was a funny promo. John Moxley has a New Japan title. You think that this suddenly is just gonna, oh my God, people just love to be mad for no reason.
Right, I know, it's crazy. TK also addressed the signing of Mark Henry, you know, and he basically loved the signing. I'm not gonna read the whole thing. He also indicated that another wrestler currently on the roster will join Mark Henry on commentary for the Friday night show Rampage. Khan also offered for an update on the night's surprise appearance of Leo Rush. So basically he says, I haven't got pen to paper, but Leo and I have a handshake where he can work here and in New Japan. He wanted to keep working here. He wanted to keep working here. And I think we've worked something good out on a handshake. So it was basically a handshake deal Tony feels good about it, but it looks like he has the flexibility to work with New Japan when he sees fit. So I think that's pretty awesome. And if he can, you know, as we said before, if he can do something against the Private Party, I think that would be awesome.
I think so too. And I mean, the Forbidden Door is open, right? So
wide open.
Jumping program to program, and look, like, there's so many guys that work New Japan or worked New Japan in the past, and look at Moxley, he's everywhere. Like, I think it's really cool when people get to show up wherever they want, but have like a central home, I think, is something that'll be good for Lio Rush in particular.
Well, I'm interested to see how they utilize him. So so we'll see what happens with Lio. I know I have something in this agenda. I'm skipping it, Kate. I want to talk about Paul White on Busted Open Radio. He was on Busted Open, and they asked him, I guess, about wrestling again. And he basically was like, you know, there were always plans for him to wrestle coming into AEW, and he's itching to actually do it. So, Kate, I know you kind of were, you know, not super high on Paul White, you know, without going through his whole long, you know, kind of quote here. He seems very eager to kind of jump back in the ring. I don't know what kind of shape he's in, you know, because he's in the suit and the jacket or the golf shirts. But I mean, I'm assuming if we're seeing what we're seeing out of like Sting, I'd be interested in seeing Paul White work. Especially if he's been working with some of the people in AEW, because it seems like, you know, Sting came out and did his whole balls to the wall thing and it worked. I'd be interested in seeing what Paul White can do. Would that interest you?
It really depends on the program. Like, Sting is such, like, we've talked about this. I was never like the biggest Sting person. But from the second he showed up, it was just like, first of all, it was a stunning development, right? And like, he just has such an aura and a charisma to him that I don't know if Paul White has ever had. I don't think he's ever needed to have it, because look at the dude. It would really depend on whatever program he's going to jump in. If it's going to be used the same way, like a Sting and a Darby, I felt like they got really stuck in the mud with that. But I liked the idea of him being used to put over younger talent who he obviously has like a character parallel with, etc. So it really, really, really would depend on how he's used. I think a tag team with him and Marco Stunt would be the only way to go.
Maybe we see Jericho at some point again. We team with Jericho and Big Show. Yeah, that was a team.
That was fun.
It was a lot of fun. So we'll see. Now, Kate, the big news of the day, and while it doesn't directly affect AEW, we have to bring it up because it could affect them down the line. So it was reported that last night by Fightful that there would be another round of WWE budget cuts pending, and they could, you know, start chopping people this week. Well, a whole list of names were confirmed today, and we did see them leave. Some of the names on this list are pretty ridiculous to kind of see who was released. And I'm not saying because of a talent. I'm saying because of what they had invested in, you know, kind of these talent, these names. The first one up was Braun Strowman. I mean, they really invested a lot in Braun Strowman, and he seemed like he was going to be that guy. Today also, Lana was cut as well. Aleister Black, who they just relaunched on SmackDown and kind of set up in a feud with Big E. At least that's what I'm reading. Ruby Riott, Buddy Murphy were also cut loose. And NXT Santana Garrett. Now, some other rumors were, and again, according to Fightful, a few select people at WWE knew about the releases yesterday afternoon, and the plan was to call talent this morning. But a lot of the site sources were surprised. A lot of Fightful sources, I'm sorry, were surprised by the cuts. and asked Fightful if they knew what the end game was. So Fightful basically said that the speculation is that these moves could be a sign that they're going to put the WWE up for sale. These are usually moves that happen once you're going to put your company up for sale, but nothing has been confirmed from WWE officials. So it's just crazy because one thing, PW Insider basically said that these plans for talent cuts had to come pretty quick, Kate, because Santana Garrett was rumored to be debuting on SmackDown this Friday. So if that's the case, then they really kind of came about this really quick. Also, Strowman's contract from 2019 was basically a crazy deal. He made more than $1 million per year. So they're going to have considerable savings from cutting him loose. But yeah, it's kind of crazy, Kate. Like, nobody saw this coming, and especially with somebody like Aleister Black, who they just were reintroducing on television, and Braun Strowman, who they invested so much time and effort into, are the huge names on that list. So I have to ask you, Kate, who, if any of these guys, would you want to see show up in AEW? And if it's nobody, that's fine, but where can you see some of this talent playing out, and what would a good kind of, like, you know, maybe feud or something be? You got anything that you've thought about?
Oh yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to, well, the first two things that came to mind was sign me up for Heidi Lovelace, Ruby Riott immediately. I mean, her versus Britt Baker, get out of town. Like, I think she has such a distinct look and personality, and she's great in the ring. She really, really is. She didn't always get to show a ton of it, especially like in the angles that she was in, but she can really go. She's really great, and a ton of TV experience. I think she would be great addition. The other thing that was like just so obvious to me was get Tommy End, Aleister Black, and put him in the Dark Order. My goodness, I think if you wanted to suddenly turn the Dark Order into a bunch of like creepy ass heels, almost like they initially were with those vignettes again, and take the goofy shine off of them. This is what I love about the Dark Order, man. The versatility. I said it before.
True.
Style wise, character wise, you could turn it around immediately if you wanted to. Doesn't have to be yet. Murphy is a great worker. I don't know if they need another guy that's a great worker. I would love to see more of him like in a character situation. We didn't get to see a lot of it, but he's really, really skilled. You know, I said to me, the biggest one is Tommy End / Aleister Black. That's just so obvious to me. Let him and Pac kick the shit out of each other. I could watch them just strike each other for 40 minutes. I'd be happy. I don't know if they want Braun Strowman. I don't think there's harm in having him there. He has a really big following and could do some cool stuff. I don't know if it makes a ton of sense for me. And Lana is an interesting one. I think if they wanted to bring her over and stick her back with Miro, they could do something really cool. I kind of like seeing Miro on his own. I don't necessarily need that. If they wanted to make him happy and bring her in, that was really fun when she was there, especially with the Bulgarian Brute stuff. So I'm not against Braun or Lana, certainly, but to me, the biggest thing is go get Aleister Black. The other really interesting thing is Zelina, his wife, was at the Performance Center, but there was never any confirmation that they put pen to paper for a contract for her. So I don't know if they would both be out of there, but he did go on her Twitch stream today, which I was like, if she resigned and is trying to get fired and is doing that by having him go on her stream, that's the funniest shit I've ever heard. That's so perfect if that is the case. But, that stuff is just head scratching when like Chelsea Green gets released and she was signed 2 months before that. Like you said, Garrett was supposed to debut on SmackDown on Friday, which she probably thought is the best moment her career, and then she's getting released. That's nuts. As far as the sale goes, I mean, the commonality is that they were all locked into long-term deals outside of her, right? So and money deals from when they were talent hoarding pre-pandemic. But I would love to know what the tally is for how many people they've let go since the first round during the pandemic layoffs, because I think that alone was 30 people. So since then, I'm wondering what the grand total is. And not to mention, them doing it today is 87 days before All Out. So if they just waited till next week, they could have screwed over everybody for All Out. But also keep in mind, Daniel Bryan contract is up. Samoa Joe is out there. And this isn't on the agenda, but it should be noted, the third hour of Raw did 1.1 million. Lowest ever by a lot. AEW is pulling 900,000. So if I'm Tony Khan, if ever there was a time, I feel like Brock is out of the picture. I know I'm a punk mark, but I think he's the other guy out there that really moves the needle. Maybe Daniel Bryan does too. Now's the time to open it up, because if they're pulling 1.1 million when you're pulling 900,000, you're not competing with NXT anymore, buddy. Like, now is the time, because man, they're not financially vulnerable, but their ratings are. Dear Lord, this has a lot more implications than people are giving credit for. I think this is very, 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 very bizarre. But if you're gonna get released, boy, is there ever a time to do it, because wrestling in general is in a pretty healthy place right now. So
they just
lost their dream job. Go find a new one. There's a bunch out there. It's gonna be great for you.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the rumors are that you know, with the third hour of programming, that AEW is going to push to open up their pocketbooks a little bit more and book more talent, you know, and expand their roster. So I think some of these guys make total sense. I'm with you. I want Aleister Black in AEW. I think it works for him, and have him debut it All Out. That would be awesome. Braun Strowman, I can, you know, take or leave him. I think that one thing that he gives you, Kate, that, you know, maybe a lot of people don't realize, is the WWE is using him a lot in press and like doing charitable events and things like that. So he could be a big name. The other thing too, is with some of the names that are kind of hanging out there, you know, now having Mark Henry help you as a recruiter and a coach, you know, I think that helps, because he's another big WWE guy. Right. And I mean, I know that the Big Show was too, you know, but, you know, Mark Henry is definitely there to help you. And a lot of these guys, you know, I know, I think I saw a couple people put up pictures, and some of them had, you know, like Mark Henry in them. So there are definitely those ties. But it's just going to be interesting to see how, you know, kind of what happens. There's rumors that there's more layoffs coming, you know, like Liv Morgan could kind of catch an axe here at some point. Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. And then, yeah, the other rumor, Kate, is that Selena Vega did sign a contract. Like, it did happen, and now she might be stuck. So that's just a rumor. I don't remember where I saw that report. I know I read it a little earlier today. But, yeah, this is just a crazy situation.
He just kicked the shit out of Big E on SmackDown. Like, just did it. So that is startling. And the only other thing that I wanted to mention that I saw out there was that there are more people that have been NXT champions that have been released than have gone on to win championships on the main roster, which is startling. Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, and Drew McIntyre.
Finn never got his shot to get it back.
No, he was champion for one day. Drew was kind of an accident, and Kevin Owens and Seth, I mean, Seth has won continually since, but like, they've just done nothing with the new NXT champions. Completely different story on the women's side.
Right.
They run the division. But I mean, just a startling mishandling of what they call a developmental system. They develop people and then they just drop them off a cliff. It's absolutely absurd.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, Kate. You know, that 90-day no compete, as you said, ends just before All Out. So it is possible that maybe we, it is in Chicago. Oh, stop with the CM Punk. My goodness.
I'm insufferable.
Oh my God.
He also, by the way, put out an absolutely scathing tweet. Let me see if I can find it because it is worth reading. He basically called their current product trash, but he did it
in, I mean, of course,
the most CM Punk way that you possibly can.
It's all right. I'll vamp while you search. All right, go ahead.
It's like a movie with a blockbuster budget and cast, but if it's written by a creatively bankrupt nincompoops specifically for an audience of one in a language nobody understands anymore, it's ellipses trash. But people watch it because it's like movies.
It's on.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not inaccurate.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of flux happening, and it'll be interesting to see if there's any truth to the rumors of the sale. So we'll keep our eyes peeled. That's kind of what we do here on the Mark Order podcast every Wednesday night. Excuse me, every Wednesday night at 10:15 here on Facebook Live and usually rantemradio.com. Hey, we're sending out our best thoughts and well wishes to Matt, that he hopefully finds a smile and he comes back to us.
Hashtag pray for Matt's smile.
Hash brown, pay for Matt. Pray for Matt's smile. So, Kate, we will be back again next week. We will have Dynamite to discuss from
Friday.
And we'll likely have a little tip of the schlong coming back to discuss Dark, because those segments are a lot of fun. And then, obviously, any news and notes that we have to cover, the release today and anything else, if anything else happens next week. But, Kate, anything you want to plug?
No, I just want to say thank you to the people who are on Facebook today chatting up. That was really, really fun to have some interactivity in there. Always encourage people to join the Shining Wizards Discord. You can find the link at Wizards Podcast on Twitter, or we occasionally tweet it. We talk about wrestling. We have a breakdown of every promotion in there. We have a DDP channel, which is really just an exercise channel in general. We have books. We got music. We've got memes and shit, which is a phenomenally underrated channel, in my opinion. We got no assholes in there other than me. So... No, it's a really fun time, so feel free to join that. Follow the Mark Order podcast on all of your social media, and thank you so much for listening. I'm at On Deck IC, or I'm at Kate at On Deck IC on Twitter now. I completely forgot. I used to not have my own handle. Follow me, and just keep an eye out. Wrestling landscape's a little crazy right now. I like it.
Yeah, it's an interesting place to be. As Kate said, you can follow us on social at Mark Order Pod, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Follow us on Facebook. Thanks to everybody watching on Facebook tonight. Eventually, I'll be able to see you in the chat and get to know the names. But thank you, everybody, for watching. We appreciate it. I do suggest you come and listen to this show tomorrow. Just certain pieces of it, so you can catch a little bit of audio. I appreciate everybody who listened live tonight. You can follow me on social. I'm at Ant Money on Twitter, at Ant Money 24/7 on Instagram. Instagram's a little slow right now since we're not out and about doing the things we used to do. But hey, it's a bad boy summer, Kate. We've got a Mark Order podcast trip July 11th. To Baltimore. We're hitting up the Orioles game. We're hitting up Jimmy's Famous Seafood. We're hitting up that Ring of Honor pay-per-view that night. So we're going to be there. If anybody else is going to be in Baltimore, we'd love to say what's up before the show. So we've got some time to plan that. We're talking about maybe going, and it's not the summer, but we can make plans during the summer. We're talking about going to St. Louis. Listen, things are picking up.
Things bad boy fall, up. Bad boy winter, whatever.
Listen, I'm all about it. But one thing I do know,
margaritas are forever.
Listen, one thing I do know is if you're gonna have a bad boy summer, you better be vaccinated. Please get vaccinated so that we can get through this. Although I did see here in New Jersey, we're at 70% immunized, so we're in a good spot. But hey, we want to see all you people. We want to take trips. We want things to get back normal. And we want live wrestling. So that being said, we're going to sign off for the night. It's been about 3 hours, so we're ready to beat it for the evening, and we're sure you don't want to hear us ramble on any longer. So tune in next week, same time, same place, for the Mark Order podcast. We'll be talking about Dynamite and everything in the world of AEW. For Kate, I'm Amp Money. We will see you next week.
This concludes the Mark Order podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Join the Mark Order.